And we're going to try, like we did last week, by not muting anyone. We're just going to have a conversation. Everybody's going to try their best to stay in order. Don't leave your mics open if you're not talking, so that we don't get any feedback from, through your mic. Anybody have a comment or something they want to look into?
Jerry Gage should be on the computer.
Yeah, I think I saw him in here already.
Okay, this is Bill in California. I'd like to go after him.
Okay, well, don't hurt him.
Say again?
Don't hurt him. You want to go after him?
No, I'd like to follow him in his discussion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
He's in New York and I'm in California, so I'm already after him.
All right.
I'm 3 hours behind him.
No, actually, you're before him. Let's think about this. Well, you're after. Yeah, that's right. You are after him. Okay.
Good.
Or are you before him?
I don't know.
It depends on which perspective you're looking at it.
If I go east,
anybody got noise in the room? Quiet it down before you open your mic. But anyway, go ahead.
If I go right, I'm behind Jerry. If I go left, I'm before him.
There you go. It depends on your perspective. All right. Anyway.
Hi, John Lewis.
On
Michigan, not starting with a legal issue, but when will I be able to? I'm doing good, sir. How about yourself?
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Good. Listen, when will I just be able to touch base with you just for a couple of minutes so we can finally get...
Well, it's probably because I removed every state coordinator in Michigan, and
right.
I did that for a few days because I had some more problems and more calls, and I think I have a settlement on it, and I think I was hoping to be settled tonight, but it doesn't look like I just couldn't get the job done, and I think it'll hopefully be settled tomorrow. And then I'm going to put all the original state coordinators back on, and then you guys got to figure things out from there. I'm just going to set up a few basic rules and also set up an arbitrated process if there is something that needs to be arbitrated. But I don't want to get into those details tonight, and it should come into effect hopefully tomorrow. And then we can always discuss it further. I'm trying to think where would be the best place with a Monday night. I guess we could discuss it on Monday night program if you have any questions about it at that point. This is Thursday, so Friday it should be set up, and then Monday if you have any comments.
Okay, not a problem. Okay. So I should look for some. Will there be something going out?
Oh yeah,
tomorrow?
I'm
going
to put out a blast email to everyone.
Good deal.
Because you're not the only place I have a problem. I just spend too much time trying to figure out problems that, on one hand, I don't want to be involved with. But I did figure out a way. I really, this whole thing really may end up being a blessing for me because even though it was a little stressful for me to have to go through all this stuff and deal with it, time is just so tight on me, and I didn't have it. But it was necessary for me to do it, and it forced me to puzzle through some problems because, again, this is not the only place I have this problem. And so I gave some thought, and by God's mercy, I came up with some ideas, and I threw it by a few people, and I think we have a solution that should answer all these problems without me having to get involved. So
I will look forward to that correspondence.
Okay.
Look forward.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so where are we going tonight?
Jerry has presented that article on the District Courts of the United States versus the United States District Courts.
That's correct.
And I think that would be a very good topic to lead off.
Right. Yeah, that was a very interesting article. I was somewhat familiar with it, was not familiar with some of the court cases. It was very eye-opening for some of those court cases. I also found... I did a little more research, and I found a statute which was very interesting, too, which kind of really settles the whole thing, the whole debate. But the bottom line is this. All Article III courts, let's go a different direction. Every federal court that is created by the legislature is an Article III court. And there is a fraud going on. Of course, it's a progressive movement, and they claim that they have some authority. I think they claim it's under Article 4, Section 4, where it says that they have the authority to create other federal courts or other courts on the District of Columbia. I went to that article. I went to it very, very carefully, and it's bogus. The claim is bogus. They don't have that authority. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled some rulings that talked about two different court systems, federal court system. One they call, I recall one particular case that referred to that there was two, that there was the regular federal court system that is required to be under common law, and then there is another court system, they didn't call it federal, but they call it a court system, another court, they really put, not system, but another court, which came through under the power of Congress for the purpose of dealings with District of Columbia. And again, I find nothing in the Constitution to support that. I believe that United States Supreme Court decision was an error. Nevertheless, there was a division of the two. And the big game, of course, is trying to play games with your zip code and calling it a residence. Your house is a residence. It's registered as a residence. Therefore, you know, the people who live there are residents. And that's the big game. They kind of force everyone into the same pot of fiction that they've stewed up and work their fraud upon the people and fleece us. And destroy us and jail us and just destroy our lives, and they couldn't care less. As long as they're happy and pleasant, they don't care if you or your children or anybody suffers. These people are evil people. There are no other words for it. They have no compassion, no consideration for another human being, and unfortunately there's quite a few of them. But in any event, I did find some other Supreme Court cases that made certain things clear, and the proper name for the federal court is a federal court of the United States. I believe that's how it's supposed to be said. They have called it, they pulled the same game that they pull in all the states. They reversed the name and they called it the United States, it's Federal District Court of the United States. They played a game and they turned it around and called the United States District Court. And therein is their corporation laid on top of what they claim to be the authority of Congress to do that. Now, when Congress went and did certain rules and laws, now there is a federal code that is in. Let me see if I can find that real quick because I did a paper on this since then. I found it pretty fascinating, so I appreciate the information that was sent to me on this. Let me see if I can get to this. Grand jury, yeah. Okay. We did an information which we're going to read on Monday. It's, I think, one of the most potent papers we've ever did. It's going to definitely be the most controversial, and I think it's going to be extremely powerful. And we'll get the impression of people on Monday when we do read this. But anyway, there is a code, and that code is, I'm skimming through, 28 U.S. Code subsection 132 defines the creation of district courts, and here's an interesting statement, as courts of record. Okay, so 28 U.S. Code, subsection 132, composition of district courts. There shall be in each judicial district a district court, which shall be a court of record known as the United States District Court for the district. Now, that's very interesting. Now, I know Supreme Court judges are mentioning the other name around, turn it around for the proper way, which I think they're probably correct, because if you go into the Constitution, I think it would be more appropriate to be looking at, they were inferior district, they were inferior courts set up in the districts, and power was invested in Congress to create these courts as necessary. and they created one for every district. There are, I don't know, I'm guessing approximately 150 districts in the United States. And I'm kind of guessing, I think it was 12 or 13, we discovered that there are federal appellate courts. And, of course, there is only one United States Supreme Court. That's in Washington. And they cover the whole gambit. Now, what's very interesting is this code. To walk into a court, they want to call themselves United States District Court for the court for the district of whatever, Northern District, Southern District of New York, or whatever the case may be. They can call themselves that, and I like that because 28 U.S. Code 132 says you're a court of record. And we already know that the other court has already been established, or the other name has been established, which is a little more stronger maybe if Congress wanted to use that. And that brings us under law, and the only law that exists ultimately is common law. You can get into equity where they play with statutory courts. You can get into chancery courts, which are statutory courts which are not legal to run in the United States. They've been banned from the inception of the Constitution, even though they were existing here at the time of the Constitution, coming to be in 1789. When it was ratified and our nation actually began at that point. So they are courts of record, and there's nothing they could do about it, and we're going to really let them know that. Now, no matter how you go about it...
John, can I just interrupt for one quick second? It's Lydia. Also, and you can double-check this, and I'll double-check it too, but... 18 U.S.C. 242, which is the conspiracy statute.
Right.
You know, we always like
very
to use 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242. The explicit language of 242 says the district courts, common law also, here's how it goes. These are conspiracy statutes. So it says in the explicit language of 18 U.S.C. 242 that if there isn't a statute that covers your specific circumstance, then common law extends to the district court. So you have it in that statute, too. So when you assert the conspiracy statutes, they reiterate that common law extends. And they say this explicitly in the language. I know I had to argue
what,
in front
what
of
What number is that, 18242, did you say?
18 U.S.C., Section 241 and Section 241,
242. Yeah, conspiracy again. So let me read that.
242.
This is... 242. Let me go to 242 then.
Well, the two of them go together, but it's 242
says. 18 U.S. Code 242, deprivation of rights under color of law. Whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in the state, territory, very interesting, territory, commonwealth, possessions, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities, secured or protected by the Constitution of or laws of the United States, or to different punishments, pains, or penalties on account of such person being an alien or by reason of his color or race, then are prescribed for the punishment of citizens, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. And if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosive, or fire, shall be fined under, by the way, Rich, that's one for you, under this title, or imprisoned not more than 10 years, or both. And if death results, then the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts included kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years or for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. Okay, so that's a very powerful one. Now, it does say district. It refers to the district. And so that really generalizes both, whatever word game or word magic they want to play, that's fine. And I'm going to incorporate some of this into the paper we did. And again, you know, we're going to reveal this paper on Monday. We'll read it on our Monday night program. And this is going out hopefully this week. We'll get into details onto that, you know, this coming week. and it's going to go out to every single court, every single federal court across the nation, and every federal judge across the nation, and it's something like 2,200 letters we're going to have to send out, and that 2,200 letters is going to be a 10-page bill. It's called a true bill, which I discovered recently. I kind of knew that there was an order and a requirement, but as I was looking into this, I realized a true bill of information is no different than a mandamus coming from the king, which is the grand jury who sets those informations in. And when that information goes in, and if it has an order on the bottom of it, they have no choice but to obey. Of course, if that order is violating someone's unalienable right, they don't have to. But obviously, we're trying to get the unalienable rights of the people protected by and through this bill. And so I think it's going to be very powerful. Now, the only catch on this, and Gerard's talking to someone that has some money. He has helped us, on a couple occasions before, especially earlier on. And we're going to ask them for $4,000 or $5,000 so that we can get this mailing out, because that's about what it's going to run. It's going to be about 10 pages inside of each envelope, the envelopes, and then the mailing. I'm not sure exactly what that's going to be. It's probably at least $1 a piece. And the printing, I can't do it off my printer. It's going to be about, let's say it's 2,000 to make it easy, 2,000 letters times 10 or 11, 12, times 12 pages. Okay, that's over two boxes, which, let's see, each box with 10 reams comes 500 sheets for reams, so that's 5,000 pages per box, so it's two boxes plus a couple more reams. And then the ink, I'm sure it's going to run every bit of $5,000 to get this mailing out. Now, originally we were planning to do something. I'm kind of giving everybody sort of a premature view on this because we'll be discussing this on Monday. But originally we were going to send only to the New York judges and to the chief judge here. And then after that, after giving them 7 days, which would take a little time in mail and then a few days grace and then a decision making and going forward, it'll be 10, 12 days out before we go national. Meanwhile, we're trying to really get leadership in each state that'll take the responsibility. And we have not been able to achieve that yet. Although we have leaders in most states, they're still not stepping up to bat. The state coordinators, they need to step up to bat. They need to take the responsible road. It's their duty now. And you don't have a choice anymore. You know the truth. You're in the movement. You understand that this is the only way we're going to save America, the only peaceful way to save America. I am aware of no other peaceful way to save America. So now that you know that, you have a duty, and you cannot walk away from that. And so we all have to give it our utmost and everything to save this nation. And part of this is to step up and take on that leadership role and lead. Now, we're not really, we are kind of leaders, but we're coordinators, and we got to be careful. We have to lead humbly, because sometimes leadership goes to people's heads. So we have to be careful that this doesn't happen. I speak to myself first. We got to be careful that this doesn't happen. But in any event, we have to go forward with this. But anyway, since we're not organized enough yet and we're working through that organization, I can see another 2-3 weeks before we fully organize the nation in such a way as to confirm a leadership that will commit to do a job. And we would send the information to that state leader, and they would get a couple people together and take a collection, and it might cost you $100-$150 to get the stuff out. But the problem is trying to sync that up. The real potency of this, what we're about to do, is that everything hits every court and every judge the same day. That's the potency. We can't have it, we make a call, oh, I didn't get around to it yet, or I forgot, or I didn't have the money, I'm going to get to it next week, I just can't do it today. I know we'll be here 6 weeks just trying to get the letter out. It'll be spread across. These people won't be hit in a big way, and at the same time, they'll have time to really try to make moves maybe. They won't realize in the beginning how big this thing is. If they get hit in one shot, every single judge and every single court at the same day, and they make the phone call, oh, yeah, I got one of them, too. Yeah, I got. Yeah, they filed it in this court, and they filed it down in the Southern District, and they also heard they filed it out in the West. Yeah, they filed it in Pennsylvania. You see, this is what's going to get to them. And we got 48 seals. Before this paper goes out, which will hopefully be next week, we have 47 states on board, but we have Delaware as the last one. I've been assured that that's happening, I think, over this weekend, or maybe before the weekend. So Delaware is going to be on board. We have 48 states, and that's powerful to go out with 48 states. I went out and bought another seal, and that seal is called the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and Common Law Grand Jury. Then it says in the center, the same as all the other ones, the common law by the grace of God. So it says grand jury. Seal. Common law by the grace of God, and then the center 1215. So we're going to use that seal, okay, on the main paper, and then ink seals all the way down the rest. Now, I'd like to use embossed seals, and we do have seals from a lot of states, but there's still a lot of states we do not have seals from. And then we've got some seals from some states that they sent us an ink seal. That's not good enough. The seal of honor that we put on, that is the highest seal in the land, has got to be an embossed seal. It cannot be an ink seal. So the three states or so that did ink, you got to go back and you got to get yourself the embossed seal. And the states that have not sent it yet, they need to get sending it. If we have to go to the United States Supreme Court, which is a slim possibility, I think, at this point, I think we're going to achieve this from this next move. But if we have to go to the Supreme Court in the United States, I really would like to go with the embossed seals for every single state. So I have pushed the people who have been working around the clock and around the nation to get this job done. By pushing the states and helping them organize and get them going, I'm pushing them now to make sure they get out and get these seals off these people. And so that's the next big step. And we need commitment. And there's a few other new things we're going to reveal on Monday. It'll be revealed by email, and it'll be posted up on the site, but we will discuss it on Monday. Some things that's really going to work out well, help us to organize a lot better and to make things a lot clearer for people. So we have some guidelines that really straight and narrow us. I also did a orientation for administrators. We did a video on that. That video is done. And we may reveal that on Monday and just put it up there, because I think people should understand some of the things that are in that video. There's a lot of other videos that we're working on, and those will be all how-to videos. We discussed that last Monday, and so on. So anyway, this paper that was sent to me concerning the two courts, and you know, the Article III court and the bogus claim of an Article IV court. No such thing. The people never ever did that. Go read Article IV. I think it's Section 4. It does not say when they claim it says. But in any event, this paper really kind of, I should have known this and I should have realized this. I kind of was aware of it, but I really didn't think too much on it. But I added this argument into this paper, which gives it more potency and makes clear the fraud without no doubt. These people are guilty of RICO conspiracy. High treason. It is literally organized crime. Go right ahead.
My name's Jerry. I'm the one that sent you the paperwork.
Right.
And it came from a friend of mine. I did not put it together, so I'm not going to take any credit for it. But this guy does a lot of legal studying and a lot of case law studying in the local law library. And I'm afraid that it's the game that these courts have set up to protect themselves and this wickedly evil system that is taking the country down right now. And it seems to me, and we've had some experience with it, that court is much like, I think it was Jordan Maxwell brought it out at one point, it's like a tennis court where the ball goes back and forth over the net, and every time the judge can insert a word that effectively changes the jurisdiction back to this legislative jurisdiction that they want to play in because they have unlimited discretion to do whatever they want. If you don't object to the use of the word and its meaning at the time, and it's almost, for any layperson, it's virtually impossible to do that, they keep switching the jurisdictional venue, if you will, back and forth so that it's making it extremely difficult to get any kind of a just ruling out of these people. And
right.
Apparently from what the fellow that put this paperwork together has studied is the fact that there has been no case brought before the Supreme Court to distinguish the specific differences between the United States District Court and the District Court of the United States. And I suspect he's going to be entertaining, I know he's entertaining the idea of putting together a brief and try to ask for a declaratory judgment from the Supreme Court as to exactly what the functions of the two different courts are. And the
well, they won't answer that question, but
I'm sure they won't.
If you can get him into this room maybe next Thursday or some Thursday in the near future so we could discuss it, he does have some flaws in his position. He rested and relied on, I think it was two, maybe it was just one, but I think it was two United States Supreme Court rulings, which supports his conclusion. but that ruling is a dead set and error. It is just dead. There's no proof of in any way of the conclusion that there are actually there are actually two United States Supreme Courts, one given power and authority under Article 3 and the other one Article 4. That's an outright misunderstanding of Article 4-4, and I think that's what it is, 4-4. And but it is the game they're playing, and what
that,
really
that's
kicks,
my point.
Yeah, it is the game they're playing. But you see, you don't have to argue any of those things. You just look at, you know, people make a big stink, and I say this over and over again. They make a big stink about standing. If you are arguing standing in a court, you're in the wrong court. You're going to lose. Okay, the only thing you can argue is jurisdiction, and I wouldn't even argue it. I would demand and state it. And every time they move over into that fiction, I would object, and I'd get to the point. And you know, when I'd leave that court, my objections would go into writing, and every single one of these people would be guilty of a conspiracy against me, and I'd sue them all. And if I'm in a state court, that I would do the beginning of the lawsuit in the state court. But I would immediately, in the next letter, in the next envelope, on the same day, I'd move it into the federal court. And they would all become the defendants, no matter what I was in the court, whether I was a plaintiff or a defendant. I'm never a defendant. And I'm never a defendant in any of their cases, because every one of their cases are courts not of record. They have no power over me. And when I open my court of record, I call myself the plaintiff, no matter what they do. And they are the defendants. And that's the way people have got to think, because you can't give them any credibility or any jurisdiction. And when that's not going to give it, one of the things we decided on early on is when we went into the courts, we're going to tell the hardcore truth. We're going to lay it on the line and tell it the way it is for everyone to see. And of course, they've been hiding our papers forever. They've been returning our papers. They don't want them in their system. And whatever papers have landed in the system, we know that they've been eventually expunged. We've seen that happen on people whose court cases we're working with, and their papers are being expunged right before them. Every paper they file, they're pulled out. I mean, let me tell you, I'd make sure that guy's going to jail for 20 years because it's a judge that's doing it in all of these cases. But on this paper, we've got, and this is the big thing, I don't think people really understand the huge success we have had in the past week or two. We have one indictment of a United States Supreme Court, United States federal judge, okay, federal court judge. We indicted him, and it went through. It's in the system. We have stamped paper back with a timestamp on it, on the front page. We did an information, and that went through. That information was on sovereign citizens and the fraud that's going on and the abuse from the court system. And it really is a really hardcore hit on these Supreme Court, New York State Supreme Court justices on the executive level down in New York City, Prudente being one of those eight. I mean, it is really a hardcore strike on them. We then took all of those eight judges, which we had indicted in New York that never went through, and we filed it into a regular index number to get into the court. We took all eight of those. We took two or three other judges. It was a total of 12 altogether, so it must have been four judges. And so we took those 12 judges and two clerks, 14 of them. We did a consolidated indictment. Well, we used all the original indictments, and we consolidated in one filing. We did a cover sheet. We did a file on demand. We send it in, and we're expecting any day to hear that that, too, has been filed. This information, it'll go out next week, hopefully, if we get the money up by next week. This information will also, we believe, will have no doubt get through, and it'll be in the hands of every judge. And it is an exposure in a way that they never want. Now, all of these indictments together, and the information we did, and this information collectively proves the case of everything we're talking about. This is organized crime on steroids, our court system. Yeah.
This is Bo in Pensacola, Florida.
How you doing?
Let's talk about that, filing a complaint in the state court and then switching it over to the federal court. And where can I get a copy of the paste?
You can get an example. Let me see. I think we have it up on... let me see if I can find this. I think you can find it on the news. It's going to be from the perspective of the grand jury, but just change it to the perspective of the individual, and you should be able to get it through. And let's see, Trubill, federal court mandamus, federal court order.
Who's letter, got some cases going?
Huh?
Has anybody got some cases going with the 18 USC, what were we talking about, the 25,
well,
42?
Yeah, there's a lot of people with those kind of cases, but you see, what you got to do, if the case arises from the town, or it arises from a city, or it arises from the county court or from the state court, any court from the state and under, if it arises there, the moment they violate your unalienable right, at that moment, it then just became a federal case. There is no state court that can hear that case once it becomes a constitutional violation. There's no court in your state that can hear that. The Constitution is clear. Huh?
It's like a statement of claim?
No. This has nothing to do with claims or anything. This is to do with wrongdoings and filing a... a case against
Corey Townsend and I are there already. I'm already had my civil rights violated, and so once local authorities, city, county, state,
hey, hi. I'm tired of being on defense. I want to get on offense.
Pardon me?
I'm tired of being on the defense. I want to get on the offense.
Right. So
I
you go to federal
really...
court and you sue them under 42 USC 1983, 1985, 1986, 1988. You sue them under 18 USC 241, 242. I mean, you could just copy and paste my complaint.
Right. That'll show the injuries and the potential penalties against these people. It lays out the crime quite clearly. Here's what you have to do. This is extremely important because if you do it the wrong way, you'll be going into the wrong jurisdiction. Okay? Any case arising under the Constitution becomes the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court. Before you can get to the United States Supreme Court, ultimately, which is really an appellate court, it's the highest court of the land, their decisions are final, and actually their decisions become as good as law until they're overturned. And from time to time, you know, a decision does get overturned. But generally speaking, they've been pretty solid, though. But you have to first go through the trial system, which are the district courts, and that's where they're going to try to pull you out of that jurisdiction and into another jurisdiction. And when you get into the court, the only way you can maintain your jurisdiction is to declare it very, very carefully on paper. And when they call you into the court for a hearing, it could be just for a hearing to see what's going on with the case. It could be a hearing because they did a... maybe they'll do a show cause on you and why they think that you should even go into that federal court. Or maybe they'll do, a dismissal of the case for no cause of action or no standing and all those stupid, silly, statutory BS that has nothing to do with common law. And so the very first thing you have to do in court is object to the process. I object to the process. This is not a common law process. What are we doing here, Judge? And of course, they're going to ignore you, and they're going to move along, and they're going to go through their baloney. And every time they bring up a code and every time they bring up a point to move towards a different way, you have to object. And you let them know, this is it. Look, I'm the plaintiff in this. You always have to be the plaintiff. It's very simple to be the plaintiff at all times. You could be up for murder. You can turn yourself into the plaintiff. Okay, that's how seriously defunct that system is. So you're the plaintiff, and you got to make that clear in the court. The first thing the judge is going to do is disrespect you, okay? And this is going to tell him on if you know something and if you're bold enough to correct it. Because since you're the plaintiff, he's going to talk to the lawyer first. And you have to object immediately. I object, Your Honor. I am the plaintiff. I'm the sovereign of the court. I'm over here. This is my court, my case. I'm first. Now they may ignore you, and he may pounce you down and, shoo you away like a fly and move back over anyway and tell you to shut up. And that's okay. Let it get on the record. Let it be on the record.
22 times. I got a 23rd court date next month.
Yeah, it's what they're doing is making money for the lawyers. Okay, ultimately is what they're doing. But
really
the only
wanted.
Way you could stop it, the only way you can stop it is you have to, I don't know if you know how to open a court of record. You got to open a court of record. You have to be the plaintiff. You have to sue everybody. And when you get into the federal court, as soon as you have to let this judge know in your paperwork, you have no problem suing him. You have no problems. He needs to understand that because if you don't flag him well enough and he steps over the line, you now have to sue that judge and all the lawyers in that courtroom because they're all conspirators and they just added more crimes upon you and more violations because they hijacked you into a foreign court. And you were clear.
I'll file it tomorrow if I can find a copy.
Well, let me tell you what, if you want to get good examples.
How many pages do you think the complaint is? The first initial complaint is how many pages?
Well, your complaint should be as short as possible. There's not complaints. You call them actions. Complaint goes into statutory courts. Actions go into courts of law, which is common law, court of record. So always call it an action. It is important to stay on point with certain language because those are legal languages, okay, and they're valid legal languages, not the fiction. Okay, because there is an equity court, and if you have a complaint and if you have a problem and you go and take it into an equity court, if that's what it calls for, well, you're going to get a judge now, and it is a complaint. You're complaining to the judge. When you go into common law, you bring an action against somebody. The judge has nothing to do with this. All he is the traffic cop. He's called the magistrate. So every judge is a magistrate. I call them magistrate judges on our paperwork because they do fulfill the roles of both, one in the equity as a judge and the other one in the common law as a magistrate.
Well,
now, if you want examples...
Where's a copy of an action?
Well, if you want examples of some of these things, you can go up to our website, okay, nationallibertyalliance.org. Are you new to us?
No, I've been around a while, and I'm looking for it, and I can't find any kind of... some kind of action I can copy and paste. And
right, you highlight
this.
Essays and lectures, highlight it. You have to be signed in.
Okay,
you then highlight court access course. Okay, and then after you highlight that, you will see court case examples. So that'll give you some examples there. It'll give you memorandums that you should be using in your case to describe and prove a conclusion. For instance, we have a memorandum on the two courts, equity and law, and I'm working on another memorandum, but I got caught up in too many things. But I wanted to get one where it really focuses in on the fraud, so hopefully I'll get back to that. But anyway, you got that there. You got the law of the case. It's 26 pages. And now when you no longer have to make a case on your jurisdiction or on your jurisdiction in any way anymore, because you have it in a memorandum and a law of the case. And those two pages, and I think the memorandum's got to be 20 pages. So you got 46 pages, which is in memorandum form or law of the case form. Now you can get to business and really focus in on the heart of the case in your action. And your action, maybe 10 pages or something, 12 pages, but they have to be really focused. And when you make a certain point on jurisdiction, you put a line or two, and then you refer to the law of the case and or the memorandum for the conclusions and proof of your point in the paper. One of the key points you want to do is you must have an affidavit. Must be clear, very, very precise. Give as much information as possible. An affidavit could never be too long. The more information, the better it is. It has to be a sworn affidavit. It has to be an original. So you get two originals, one you keep and one you're going to give into the court. And
can you make something like the, a nice little instruction on how to make the jury stamps and form the jury in the county? And so we went through all that. So make another one so we can go through this state court, switching it over to federal court.
Well, the problem,
going.
Yeah, the problem with that is, you know, we're explaining this verbally here on this, you know, this particular evening, this program, and we've explained it before. And if you flag the programs, you can then go and just re-listen to them and take notes and lay it out. So all this information I'm telling you is being recorded, so it'll be posted tonight up on a Monday night call page, which we'll call Thursday down on the bottom. But we're not going to spend any time writing it up, although we plan to do that, but what we're doing is going to eliminate all that. Once we get into courts, what we're talking about, a lot of this stuff's just going to disappear. You won't have this problem no more, because you'll have courts of record automatically. You'll have common law automatically. You won't have to bother fighting these judges, because if these judges try to take you into a foreign court, get on the phone right there in the courthouse. Get on that phone. You'll have, there is a administrative court right in that courthouse. There's administrative, there'll be an administrative body right in that courthouse. And if you got on the phone right there in that courthouse, they could be, maybe if they're in the building, they could be up there in 2 minutes to find out what's going on here. Because if this judge is violating your unalienable rights, we could fix it right there and then.
It happens all the time. What about that action boilerplate? Is that what I'm supposed to look at?
That's one, yep. There's a couple of different examples there, and that's one. It's sort of a boilerplate type. You know, it depends on your case and different things. And also,
typical traffic, you go to court and they ignore you.
Well, yes, but bear in mind, all the cases are the same thing. It boils down to the same thing. There's only one argument. It's called jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
Once you get into a common law court, you win. Because you're right and they're wrong, aren't they?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, well, we all know that. I know that. You know that. All of us know that. So when you get into
get
a common law court,
going.
We will win.
Well, I don't, it's grand jury. But in the meantime, I need to get this action going. So I'm going to get study this boilerplate. Now, if I file it in Florida, it'll be the circuit court. How do you switch it over to the federal?
Someone else asked me. I'll try to get a boilerplate up there by next Thursday.
Well, no big rush.
Well, I do have one. I just have to get time to get to it and, redact it and get it up.
Hello, is this? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a question about how to. I'm trying to take a ticket to court.
Yeah.
Just a traffic ticket, a routine traffic ticket, but I'm kind of new to this. But
right.
You know, it seems like the only way into court gives up jurisdiction.
No.
They gave me two choices, you know, two crappy choices.
No. Look, if it's a traffic infraction, if you don't show up, they're just going to find you guilty and send you a fine, right?
Right, so there's mitigation.
So why bother going to court, okay? Because you know you're already guilty before you go. So what you have to do, I wouldn't even bother going into the court. When I get a traffic infraction, all I do is I send a paper in, and I put the original paper, and you know the ticket stuff. I put that into the package, and you'll see that it's traffic court case, and just detail it around yours, and add all the necessary paperwork. Just be careful because it'll refer to the, you know, the it'll refer to the law of the case, and it probably will refer to the memorandum, and you make sure you attach those. And you make sure you get it to into the court, and, you know, I don't know if you want to send it to the prosecutor. You could if there's a prosecutor there, but I don't know how they run your court. The bottom line is get it into the court. You want to file it, you want to put a file on demand on top of it. We have an example up there of that. And it's pretty simple. You use the same, everything's the same. You just change a few things in it. You make it yours. And you want to send it in, certified return slip. You do not want to carry it into the court because they will reject it on you. You send it in certified return slip, and when the secretary of the court gets that paper, or clerk of the court, whatever they want to call that person, they get that paper, they're going to sign for it, and they got it. They got the potato. Hot potato is in their hands. Now they don't know what to do with it, and so they give it to the judge, or they'll talk with the judge, and now it depends on the judge. I've sent papers in, and I've never heard back from them ever again. I've sent papers in, and they send it back, and I send it back with a threat. And then either they eventually find me and warn me that I'm going to lose my license, or they're going to, New York City just sent me one, they're going to take my car, you know, for, and they want $90, you know. And so when I get to that point, I just pay the ticket. Now, what you do is, I've been doing is, the ones that I've had to pay the tickets on, I throw it in a folder. I don't have time to sue them. But I'm going to sue them all at one time. I'm going to go after the state. I'm going to go after all of the cops. I'm going to go after all the judges, all of the courts. I'm going to go after motor vehicles. And I'm going to sue them for everything I can get off of them.
So I already did it wrong, but I'll go ahead and try it anyway. I don't plan on arguing. I was just going to say, you know, how did you establish jurisdiction?
Very simple. I opened a court of record right in that court. I don't even show up, but the paperwork is clear. I'm opening a court of record. They do not have any authority or jurisdiction over me. They're all forewarned in the paper that I am appearing by paper only, number one. It doesn't say it this way, but it does express this. I'm appearing by paper only. I'm here under special, what's that term? Special appearance, okay? Which means a special appearance means you're here to test it out. But I'm here in special appearance and speaking from my court of record. You see, that's the key. You're speaking from your court of record, and you're here by special appearance, and you're offering them one chance to get out of this. Otherwise, this court will suffer collateral damage from my court. I have a court of record. They got a court not of record. I got the trump card. They lose. Now, they don't understand that usually. Sometimes they get a little nervous and they just don't want to get into the bullshit. So they just throw the case out and you never hear from them again. And that's fine. That's fine by me. And I don't show up. I just send the paperwork out.
So all this is on the site, huh?
That paperwork?
Well,
is
I don't.
Travel,
again,
the
you
travel
want to
page.
Take. Yeah, the same page I gave to you. Look, I don't explain that out there. But I just explained it here, and this is recorded, so you can come back and re-listen to this, and then take the paperwork there and figure it out.
Okay.
Now, I'm confused on a point, and I'm hoping you can clear me up on this. Do you don't surrender sovereign powers in any way by, you know, paying property taxes or getting a license?
Well, you have to choose your battles. We're going to get rid of all of that very soon. Until then, I'll pay the toll. I'll pay for my driver's license. Look, I like my driver's license anyway. I want it. I'm one of those people, I want my driver's license. And I want it for two reasons. It's a great ID, so kind of like that. And the other reason is if I want to, and I do from time to time get involved in commercial activity on the road. And if I am involved in commercial activity, then the law requires that I have a commercial license, and I do have that, and I'll maintain it for that purpose. Even if I never use it again, at least I have it if I'm gonna. So I don't mind paying the 45 or whatever the dollars they charge a year. I don't mind doing that.
John, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I was kind of going back on the topic you were just touching on a little bit. You're talking mainly about traffic, though. My case is a little bit different than that. It has to do with the identification. I guess I'll have to go ahead and tell you a little bit more about my case.
Well, you don't have to get into detail. The question is: are they trying to put criminal charges on you, or just citations for a moving violation, or something like that?
No, it's criminal charges. It's going
to
be
okay. Criminal charges you have to deal with differently. You better show up in court because okay. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. But you must show up in court. And you must lay your case out. It's all in. If you can't speak, because maybe you're not articulate in court, but you have to work through this stuff. Eventually, you got to get articulate. But if you can't in the beginning, it's fine. It's all, you know, Thornton teaches this very well. It's all in the paperwork, Your Honor. I have nothing new to say. It's all in the paperwork. Oh, well, that's a new question there. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer. These guys are all educated. You guys are very good at the law. I'm sure you are. And I'm just a nobody. And so I can't answer that question today. But I'm more than happy to answer that question in writing. And I'll get back to you within the next 20 days. You know, so if there's a question that, or if you object to something, and they say, oh, what do you object for? And you can say, hey, listen, I'm not really sure, but I know something just went wrong here. I'm taking some notes, and I'll get back to you on my paper because I'm going to follow up on a paper right after I leave here. And that's how you deal with the court without having to talk to them. Then you can go home and you can do your research and do what you have to do. Remember, when you go into court and you open your mouth, okay, and you change anything that's in that paperwork and you fall into their jurisdiction, you just lost everything you worked up to. Because the last statement you make overrules the other statements prior. And so you got to remember that. You got to be real careful what you say. So when you go into court, I only talk about one thing, jurisdiction, and they ain't got it.
Sure. So in this particular instance, I'm trying to do that. I'm trying not to say anything in court. I don't want to go and address the court or anything of that nature. Because the issue is identification. They didn't ever identify me properly in the court. So whenever I step into the courtroom, the judge tries to call me in, you know, call my case and all that kind of stuff. I already submitted the paperwork, and I didn't want to talk to the judge. I wanted the paperwork to be, you know, my case.
Right. Well, you're playing the wrong way.
Trying to address, you know, the judge calls my case, and I try to tell the judge, look, I'm sorry, but I'm not here to be the surety for the trust and all this kind of stuff. And just explain
no,
that.
No. You're giving them credibility. You're giving them jurisdiction. Whether you realize it or not.
There's a book on Bill Thornton's website that talks about anti-government movement book and how the court handles these quote-unquote false. Read that
book. Do you know where that's located at? Do you have a copy?
Yeah.
Is that electronic?
Yeah, I'll put it in the chat room right now. Let me go pull it
all
up.
All right. Well, I'm not into it. Can you send me one an email and copy Gerard too, and I'll get it up online under the near Thornton's tapes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds. I didn't know about that book, so I'd like to see that.
Yeah. It's
but
how
go
you
ahead.
Deal
finish,
with people like
what
us.
You were saying.
So I'm still not sure though. Like when I'm brought into court, like I'm not actually supposed to be there. Like if I basically was kidnapping, I brought in here. Like I'm not supposed to be in the courtroom,
right.
And I'm trying to express that by telling
the
judge.
I'm going to tell you how to deal with that. I'm going to tell you how to deal with it. It's always the same way. Look at what we're trying to teach people to do is real simple. It's the same thing over and over again. It doesn't change. It's the same thing. It's the same argument. You're challenging jurisdiction because they ain't got it, okay? And you're going to lay it out and show them how they ain't got it when the time comes. But the clear thing is this. If I have to walk into a courtroom, I walk into the courtroom. They call my name, that's fine. I'll get up. I don't care that they called my name. And, you know, all that's fraud anyway. They'll never bring that up anyway. But so I'll go up to the court, and they'll, you know, they'll start the case and whatever they want to say. And as soon as I get a chance to speak, I say, well, look, I'm here in special appearance. I've opened a court of record. I'm speaking from my court of record, and this court has no jurisdiction over me whatsoever. Have you read my paperwork, Judge, or Your Honor? You know, let's just move on. We haven't got time for all this. You know, however he's going to respond. He's going to ignore everything you do. And then you have to object to everything that goes on in that court. When the lawyer and the judge starts talking together, they're conspiring. They're not talking. They're conspiring, okay? And I object to that. You guys are conspiring to hijack me into a foreign court. I'm in a court of record. This jurisdiction has no authority over me whatsoever, and I object to this process. By the way, Judge, what jurisdiction are we in? He's not going to answer. And you may do this two or three times. He's not going to answer. At some point, you should say in the record, you know, let the record show that the judge has a duty to speak. He refuses to speak, and therefore there is fraud on the court. I object to this whole process. And just you could sit down and just object every time they open their mouth. As soon as they breathe, you object. Okay. At some point, they'll tell you to shut up, and that's okay. Fine. They muzzled you when they told you to shut up. If the judge tells you shut up, he just muzzled you. You can shut up then. That's fine. But when you leave, there are a couple of things you need to do in order to take back control of that court. You have to first, there is no mercy, and you have to put that in the paper. You are coming in with mercy for the first time. You're testing the warrant that they've got to pull you into that court, and on your paperwork, it should tell them pretty much, you know, you're coming in one time after this. This court is subject to collateral damage, and it's all quoted out in the paperwork, you know, what the collateral damage from one court to another court. Court of record can have collateral damage upon a court not of record. Because we overrule it, and that means we can sue them all individually, personally, and we can sue the corporation too. The court is a corporation. The town is a corporation. And
so my last question is: how do you establish that court of record? Then, if there's no stenographer in the courtroom, the only thing that they're, you know, this is in Virginia here, and they're not
it's
running
the paperwork. It's in your paperwork. Okay. You file paperwork with them. And you never deliver the paperwork in person. When you go to these silly courts, you know, you do it through a return slip where they have to sign for it, and you get a return slip, certified return slip. You do it that way, and you get an affidavit of service. You have your brother, your one of your children if they're older, over 18, you know, a friend, anybody. It doesn't matter. Just get somebody that's over 18 that's not party of this, and have them do an affidavit of service which says they took it, they put it in the mail, and it was sent out, and they swear an affidavit in front of a notary, and now you have an affidavit of service. It went into the mail. You got the receipt that they received it. You got a return slip from them that they received it, and they have no opportunity to refuse it because it's a sealed letter, and they don't know what it is until you open it. You walk into that court and try to file papers. They will not take it. They will not take it. Okay? So you have to do it that way. Now, once that's done, in that paper, it's going to let them know that they're susceptible to collateral damage should they abuse you. You're giving them mercy just one time. You're showing up one time. You're never coming back to that court again. You only come in once. And so once you do that, it's all in the paperwork, and shame on them if they don't read it and they don't understand it. That's their problem. They went to school. They're educated. They're big people. So once you walk out of that court, and now you're still subject to that court because they set another date for you, and you've already warned them not to do that. They did it anyway, okay? Now, you go home, you do an affidavit, and you file that in and update your case of what they've done, the sins that they committed against you. You get that into the court case. You then, whatever decision he made in the court, you do a writ of error, and you rescind his decision. Turn it right around, and you rescind it. Now, there's examples also out there of that. Once you rescind their decision, okay, now you're now going to file a federal court case, which really you're moving the case. Well, before you do that, you also want to probably file in that court and through your court of record. Remember, your court of record goes wherever you go. You can be anywhere, and you're in your court of record, well, you can open it up. So you go into town court, you open your court of record on top of that court. You're in a city court, you're in a county, it doesn't matter where you go. You open your court of record wherever you're at. So now you got your court of record already opened anyway. Now you add the judge and all the lawyers that were in that case, and you sue them. You sue every one of them. And you sue them for violating your unalienable rights, $25,000, $50,000 per violation, whatever you want, per person. That's what you're going to ask for in the wherefore clause. And the moment, then when you send that in, now you send another paper and right behind it. And that paper is, it's just one form, moving the case into the federal court because it's now a federal issue. And you're under the Constitution. The Constitution says that any cases that arise under this Constitution, that the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme, you're in the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court. They're the only ones that can hear this case now. In all cases affecting, let's see, both law and fact, shall have original convention. I'm looking for it right now. Treason in Congress. I'll try to find that. Where in? I'm pretty sure it's in Article 3. It could be in Article 4, though. But they have jurisdiction. So once you move it over there, now you have to write your papers so that judge understands that you're not going to play around with him either. If he does what they did, you're going to sue him. Because now you have a different battle with a different person. And it's a different court. And these guys play chess. You know, the lower courts, they're lucky if they can play checkers. But these guys play chess. These guys are more dangerous in the federal court. They can burn you a hell of a lot more than down in the lower courts. There's no doubt about it. But if you put them into, if you keep them in check, you know, you're pursuing checkmate because that's when you win. But you got to always put them in check. They make a move, you got to check them. Make a move, you got to check them every single time. When they see that you're putting them in check, they understand that you understand. They want that to go away, okay? And what they may do to make that go away, they may pull all the lawyers in the back room. You don't know nothing about it. And the judge is going to say, I'm in jeopardy here. He may not even say he's in jeopardy because he doesn't have to. He's just going to say, I want this case to disappear. Now, he wants it to disappear because he's in jeopardy. You're putting him in jeopardy. You're putting his flesh on the line. And so once you realize how to do that, he's going to go, he's going to tell them, I want this to disappear. And something will happen, and the case will be thrown out, and everything's gone, and everybody goes home. You should be happy with that. Okay, if you want to go sue for money, well, you can, but, you know, look, if you're getting out of a criminal thing, you should be happy.
Thank you very much for your time. I haven't really heard any specifics on where to find these documents. That's the only thing I really needed to have, find these.
Are you a member of National Liberty Alliance?
Yes.
Okay, well then, as long as you're signed in, you go up to the website, you highlight essays and lectures, just highlight it. Go and highlight underneath that Court Access Course. You should open that up. There's a lot of stuff there you can use to learn the process and the procedures and the paperwork. But bear in mind, that's from their perspective. So you have to tweak it with the common law. Now, the stuff that we wrote is you highlight court access courses, and you'll see court case examples. And when you click on that, you'll see some examples, action, boilerplate, arrest of judgment, file on demand, habeas corpus instructions, in rem, writ of error, more files. Well, then we have it also in Word and PDFs. we have memorandums of court of law, memorandums on the King's Bench, memorandums, law and jurisdiction, memorandum, law of the case.
I'm sorry, I'm under essays and lectures. I don't see court access.
Highlight. Just put your cursor on essays and lectures. Just highlight it. And the drop down will come. When you see the drop down, come down to the far right.
He has to be logged in to the site.
Yeah, oh, that's probably fine. I'm not logged in. I gotta log in real quick. Thank you.
Yeah. And you'll see all that stuff on that page. Now let me tell you something. Very, very powerful stuff on the breaking news page. That will work for you too. You know, you'll just be able to pull stuff out and use some framework there. You're not coming from a grand jury's perspective. You're coming from a sovereign's perspective. And so read those cases because you can boilerplate some of them.
Yeah, that was a, that was important for you to say too, John. You know, knowing where you're at. You know, if it's the court that's issuing the order, or if it's the, you know, the sovereign who's actually typing up the affidavit.
Right. Now that's the other thing. You see, you will win because they will never, ever, 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 ever do an affidavit. And if there is no affidavit, there is no crime. There is no court case. There's no subject matter jurisdiction. Case dismissed. Now,
hey,
in their court, they don't want to do that, and they'll battle you. But even in their court, they have those rules too. Yeah, go ahead.
The other thing is in your paperwork. I don't know if this helps or not, and I'm new at this, but I think the advice might stand. Which is, in your paperwork, you can say that you want the common law to be the Magna Carta, and if this pertains to your case, that means that no officer of the state can be a witness against you.
Well, that's in common law, right? They cannot be a witness. And but that is pretty much all in the law of the case. It's 26 pages of stuff. And it refers to a lot of stuff. It may not go directly to the Magna Carta, but it is chock full of focus in on the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, United States Supreme Court rulings and decisions, and also codes that apply to our servant government. Remember, codes were written to control them, and penalties have been written when they break those rules in certain cases. And that's why we use the U.S. codes under 18 and 42 particularly, which gives us the authority and the power to go after them for kidnapping and all that stuff, because it's spelled out there. But there's also Supreme Court rulings that help us back that stuff up, too.
Hey, John, this is Tanner. How are you doing?
Good. How you doing?
All right, man. Well, I'm way in over my head in the stuff that I'm dealing with in court, and I'm taking notes about your process of sending in the paperwork, and I need to study up on what those forms are. But, you know, as you know or may not remember, but I'm in a custody battle, and they've turned it criminal on me by doing these false victim protection orders. Now I'm doing jail every other weekend. I've got 5 years of probation and all these classes that they're demanding I take, like domestic battery classes.
Are you keeping a log?
Of what? I don't
your
think
life,
so.
The torment you're in. Are you in torment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you need to wake up in the morning. You're in torment. Write it down, or get a tape. You know, recorder. You know, digital recorder, and click that button. And say, you know, what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what's going on. Give the date. You know, today's Monday, the 23rd of January of July, or whatever the case may be. You know. And this is what you got to do today. You go into jail today because you have to spend the weekend. Get a recording of that. Get a recording of the suffering you're doing. Let me tell you something. This is a guarantee. Any judge ever puts me in jail, I will eventually get my time back at him, and he will serve. And I'll settle for 10, but I'm going after 20. He's going to serve 20 days for every day I spend in jail. And if I'm in jail for 20 days, well, he's got a whole lot of jail time to do. And that's my requirement. That's part of my restitution. That's what this man has got to suffer, what he suffered against me, and many fold over. And, of course, there's going to be a lot of money he's going to give me, because I'm going to take his house and everything I can get. And it's a battle. It's a fight. But if you really stay on your toes and focus and keep going forward, you can win in these courts. But look it, the real battle is you got to figure out where to make your battle. Sometimes if you can make a deal to get out of it, even if you get a record, don't worry, just go for it. You see, once you get through the deal, okay, and the deal is pretty much in effect and they can't renege on it anymore, sue the hell out of them, okay? And also sue them for, fraud on the court, miscarriage of justice. I mean, all kinds of stuff, and you want your record reversed and everything else, and you want damages and so on. But bear in mind, you know, I wouldn't put too much stuff into that because, you know, in a couple of months to a year, I don't know how much time is left. You know, America's not going to be here anymore. It's gone. And we're going to be taken over either by a Nazi regime or a Marxist regime. And the only thing that's going to potentially change that is two things. What we're doing right now, if we're successful and we're able to cut that off. And if we are successful and cut that off, then you will get justice then in the true court system. People will be coming back to courts trying to get justice, and we'll do the best we can to give justice to all the people. They don't have enough money or enough days in their life to pay what they have to pay now, because they've damaged way too many people. But we'll do the best we can to find justice. So that's one thing. Now, if we don't succeed in that in time, the only other thing, of course, is defending yourself. I certainly hope people have food and a source of water and the necessary equipment to defend themselves, in considering the type of situation you're going to be in. So think about the equipment you need to do that. You need to defend yourself. And everyone should be ready for that, too. Okay?
Right.
But I don't want to go there, but I'm ready. I don't want to go there. I'd rather fight with the pen and the words and maybe win there. And I think we have a heck of a shot to win if we give a bent knee to the Lord. And that is the key to this whole thing, because let's get back to liberty. Our founding fathers understood this when they wrote it in the in the United States Constitution for the United States of America. We the people, ordained and established, so on and so forth. And it said what the purpose of this Constitution was for. To protect, okay, the blessings of liberty, okay? Blessings of liberty. They understood liberty is a blessing. You can't get liberty any other way than to get it from God himself. And if God isn't blessing you, you're not going to get it. It's just never going to happen. George Washington understood this. Franklin understood this. Jefferson, all of them understood this. And they wrote about it. And so, you know, we could win by the blessings of God, and it could be that he's going to judge them before he judges the world. I suspect that that's a very strong possibility. And so how is he going to judge them? Or what better way is he going to judge them than in the courts of injustice being turned into the courts of justice? So that's a possibility, and I believe that this is how it's going to end up. Now, if not, then there's those other things we have to deal with.
So in the meantime, I mean, and I know that I may not be able to fight this deal as far as it's gone, but for my process, if I was to even attempt it, they're claiming I have to have a lawyer, and I mean, I'm already so deep into this deal, I've got custody.
We're not going to, look at where we're heading, I don't see us here any more than a month or two, three at the most. Either it's an all-out win or an all-out loss. And we will be in the United States Supreme Court if it's necessary in the next 30 days and less than that. Because as soon as we get the money necessary to get this paperwork out next week, hopefully we'll get it out next week, they got 7 days. After 7 days, they default. And once they default, that's the entire federal judicial system has collapsed. And now the United States Supreme Court has got to deal with that. And we're not asking them to hear a case. They don't have a decision to decide whether they hear a case. We're coming in with demands. We're coming in with a writ of mandamus, which is we command you. We're not asking you. We're commanding you to do what's necessary. The United States Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government. The United States Constitution guarantees the law of the land, which is this Constitution, which includes the Bill of Rights, as the law of the land, and any law or any constitution of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Okay? And this is the guarantee, and we're holding them to it. And I think someone like Scalia, look at his rulings, I think he's right there ready for that.
So should I just ride it out, I guess, and...
If it's too overwhelming, make whatever deals you can and do whatever you have to do. I don't know, you know, if you can't defend yourself and you start making waves, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
What you should be doing is riding out the best you can and working like a dog to study. Get on the website. Get through the lectures, the Bill Thornton lectures. Play them over and over and over again. Believe me, you learn from osmosis. The next thing you know, one day you're going to surprise yourself. Something's going to spill right out of your mouth, and you're going to say, where the hell did that come from? And you know where it came from, okay? That's how education works. You don't have to struggle with it. Just understand what's going on and fill your, you know, go swimming in it. That's what I did. I just went swimming in it. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff up there. You want to go swimming also, you want to get into the trial by jury, the 5,000-year leap. You got to open your Bible up. If you think you're going to get through this without bending a knee to the Lord, and just don't think, you know, you make up the God in your mind and you serve that God. That's no God at all. That's the one you made up. There's a God who tells you who he is, and you'll find him between the books of Genesis and Revelation.
I totally agree with you on that. There's been a lot of coming to know Jesus in these last days. But you know, I definitely agree with that. And I'm going to get online and do some research, but I do want to catch up Oklahoma on whatever you're doing. I've been trying to make phone calls. Everyone's really busy, I understand, so I'm doing what I can.
Well, when you go to spend your weekends in jail, can you take an MP3 player in with you?
No, I can only, even if I take a Bible, I have to leave it there.
Well, you know what? Print out Trial by Jury and bring it in. And print out the Federalist Papers.
You said that's Trial by Jury, 5,000-year leap?
No, Trial by Jury, and then there's two different things. Trial by Jury's Lysander Spooner, and then there's the 5,000-year leap. Goodness, what's that guy's name that did the 5,000-year leap? Someone must know. It's up on the website. You can go look at it.
I'll
but
go
you
see
can,
right now.
You
Cleon Skeldon.
Thank you. You can go and you can print that out, and you can read it if you can't listen to it. And so when you're out of jail, listen to it in a car and here and there, wherever you can. You know, if you do exercise, put it on then. If you're doing driving, put it on then. You're doing something mindless, put it on then. And meanwhile, when you're in jail, take that opportunity to be going to college, doing some heavy-duty weekend, 24-hour focus on your getting ready for your exams. Read. Make notes. You know, take a highlight of it. You know, with you.
All 60 some odd guys in that pod want to find out what I'm doing over here.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure. I bet you most of them don't even belong in there.
No, it was all drugs and
yeah,
domestic.
People don't belong in jail for drugs.
No, they need help. That's what I had to get. Yeah. I had to get out of that personally. I understand. You know. But, you know, the domestic one is the most disgusting one. It didn't matter what was said or done. In reality, they just were going to jail like me.
Well, you have children, right?
I got three kids, and my youngest one was from an engagement. And that's
how you're separated from these children?
Well, I get my older two. There's no problems there for my ex-wife. But my youngest one, it's like, a few hours on a Saturday and a Sunday every other weekend, but I have to do it.
Well, that is a huge damage on your son, and he needs restitution. And he certainly is not going to get it in a family court. And that's a huge damage on you, and you need restitution. You're talking multi-millions of dollars for those two injuries, okay? You can't get away from that. That could never be replaced, you know?
Right.
And that damage and separation from a father, a boy...
It's my little girl. She's not two yet.
Girl. Yeah, well, boy even more needs you, but girls too, of course, you know. And I guess girls really, they need a good, strong father figure so they know what kind of man they're going to want when they get older. They're going to want one that is responsible, and because that's what they're going to be used to. So when you get one of these hustlers come up, and you know, your daughter will be able to see who they are real quick because they're not like dad. They're not responsible.
Right.
They're not just. They're not honorable. You know, all these things. People will see. When they get older, they'll see. Look, the Bible says, train up a child on how they should walk, and they will not depart from it. I know. I've done that, and that's a promise from the Bible. It happened to me. It's fine.
Right, one other quick thing, and then I'll free your time. I just got my internet cable back on, maybe for a little while, if I can keep it up. But the phone, and I know you're super busy, but I can't access any of the education through the phone.
Why not?
It just, the website doesn't allow me. I can't even really log in. I have to use the link that was emailed to me to log in.
Now, what are you using to come in? What
iPhone 5. on
any. Okay, if you call up, if you send a thing in to the tech guy and ask him if there's anything that could be done, because our site is set up to accommodate a lot of stuff. It could be your service. You don't have enough.
It's his browser. He needs to use.
You may
want to
try a library.
Wait, say that. Two people were talking. Say it again. Hello?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
you guys
my suggestion was that you go to the library and use their computers.
Yeah, I may have to do that. What was the
if
other
you have
guy?
An iPhone, if you have an iPhone, the issue is your browser, the built-in browser. You download another browser such as Firefox or Safari, and that will let you have access to it.
I'll try Firefox. I've been using Google Chrome and another Google and a couple other ones, but I'll try Firefox and see if that works. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Google Chrome messes it up because the website's not set up on W4. It's on WW3. It's just a different way of handling the information that's presented, that's all.
So Firefox should work?
Yeah, Firefox works fine on the phone.
Will do, sir. That is greatly helpful. I appreciate that.
Right, and bear in mind, you know what you do is when you want to really get a lot of these audios, that's when you go to the library and spend an hour or two and download the audios and bring in a thumb drive with you and put them onto a thumb drive or get them onto your MP3 player, you know. And once you get them onto your I have an MP3 player, I don't know, it's 65 or 70 gigs, okay? I mean, and I have huge amounts of music. I have everything that you see on that site in audio, I have on my MP3 player. I have the Federalist Papers. I have 5,000 Year Leap. I have Trial by Jury. I have all of Thornton's law tapes, lectures and stuff, a lot of stuff. And then you can get a program like, I got a program called Absolute Video to Audio Converter. Just put that in your web browser and search it. Absolute Video to Audio Converter. And you could take any of the videos, like the Miller stuff, and you download it. You know, you can download that off of YouTube. You can click over to get to the YouTube. Well, you should be able to download right on the site anyway, and with using a Firefox. But once you download that video onto your desktop, you get this Absolute Video to Audio Converter. Now, I don't remember whether this was free or if it cost me $19. You know, it might have cost me $19 to activate it, and then I own it. And all I do is drag and drop or open the folder and negotiate myself to that video, get it into the pane, and then click on Convert. And in literally, you know, seconds, you know, if it's a long video, it might take a couple of minutes, but it converts that into an MP3. Now, you know, who needs to be looking at Miller's face? You know what I mean? Who needs to be looking at that's why what I did to all of the videos that are up online with Thornton. You don't need to be watching him. And what he has on the video, sometimes he has a screen and he looks at words, but he's already saying it. You don't need to be looking at that. So, you know, as long as you have that and you get it into your MP3 player, now you have it there. Now you don't have to drag in the drain through your, the phone, the iPhone or whatever you're using.
Okay. Now, all the paperwork and everything, that would be if I was to fight this, but right now it's time to hang on, buckle down, learn this, and we're not talking about the next steps, what a state needs to do in this call, are we?
I'm sorry?
I'm talking about what the steps for a state to do are in this call.
No, this call is just for law. I think we're going to be moving. I haven't talked with Roger yet, if people are familiar with the state call, the national call we have for organizing. I'm going to be talking with Roger and ask him to move that over to Wednesday night. Tuesday night, we're setting up, we're going to suggest to every state that Tuesday night should be the night, the evening, that they should set up their calls, their state calls. State calls shouldn't go for any longer than a half hour. It's an organizational call, and you know, we're going to lay it out exactly what a state call should look like and what should go on there. And that should be up by Monday. And so it's a PowerPoint video on that. So we have Monday night call, which is NLA call, national call. You know, update, talk about where the case is at, what's going on, what we're doing next, questions and answers, so on and so forth. Tuesday night, people should be on their state calls. You know, where all the counties come together in the state. Wednesday night will be for state leadership calls. Roger's running that. Thursday, which is tonight, is for law. Friday, we'll leave open for the potential of an emergency session that we need to call. We've done that a few times. We'll focus in on a Friday to do that. Or we'll suggest to people to give up the Tuesday if it's that important that we have to come in, give up the Tuesday state call for an emergency here, you know, meeting. And Saturday, we're doing Bible studies now. I'm sure everybody's heard about this already. I was invited on a radio station to do a Bible study. And so we're going to simulcast that right out of this room right here. So people will be able to get and ask questions. It'll be a one-hour study and 2 hours open forum at 7 o'clock on Saturday. And Sunday, we'll do nothing, you know. So that's kind of it. And, you know, you can get out as much as you put in it. And right now, it's time to go to school. It's time to go to real school. And that's what all these things are about, is real school.
Hi, John. This is Sarah.
Hey. How you doing? Who is it?
This is Sarah down in Florida.
How you doing, Sarah?
Very good. I just wanted to bring a couple of points for individuals to think of going into the future. Is that, you know, there's so many things that are considered damages or, you know, harm or loss, you know, whether it's medical, whether it's, you know, people, you know, relationships, whether it's family, neighbors, whatever, that they should be documenting, pulling, you know, everything together. So when the grand juries are open, or if they learn enough to do their own affidavit of truth and pursue the damages, you know, there's no statute of limitations in common law. So it doesn't matter if it happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago. If you never got remedy, you know, there's still process to get remedy. And, you know, I just wanted to point out that a lot of families have parent alienation issues. So it doesn't matter whether it's the husband or the wife, but there's so many families that for political reasons or just, you know, backstabbing that have caused rifts with the children, using them as pawns. So, you know, these are things that should be documented. Public notices can be made at intervals so that people know, you know, there's actually proof of what's going on.
Right. So, well, remember, affidavits is unrebutted, is proof of truth and accepted. So, yeah, if you document your situation and turn it into an affidavit when you become before the grand jury, that is your evidence. And, you know, the jury is bound to go by that affidavit if it's unrebutted by the opposing party. And, therefore, they will consider what they can do to remedy the problem through negotiation and get restitution without having to go into court. Or then they send it to the grand jury who considers indictment, and, you know, they should, if you got that kind of proof. And then it goes to the court, you know, to the jury in the court, which will decide the ultimate fate of everything. But yes, it is extremely important. Anybody that's in a legal situation, it's under stress, it's being violated, you need to be doing a diary, literally every day. And that diary, you're going to turn into a affidavit. Me, I'd be at a computer every morning typing in the information, and during the day maybe come type some information, and in the end of the evening type some information. Make sure you get everything while it's fresh, and carry a recorder, you know. Always have a recorder. You know, you can go online and go to them spy places, and for $79, you can get a recorder that is looks like something else. and they can't pick that up. And so if you have to go places where they wouldn't allow you to take a recorder, you can have one with you. Because they won't recognize it.
Most cell phones have that kind of application built right
in. Yeah, that's why they don't, here in New York, they don't let you take cell phones into your courtroom no more.
Now, John, one time when I was in court, I made a statement before the judge stating basically that this criminal deal is a result of unconstitutional VPOs to catch me in technicality to, you know, criminalize me and support alienation, which is abuse. I had to pay for the court reporter, and then I had to pay, they said, probably several $100 to get that 4-hour current court case out of there. Is that something that will be a record that I could pull on later?
The Supreme Court has ruled over and over again, we will charge no man for justice. So anything you need in the courts is free. If there's a stenographer, they've been paid. Okay.
Well, they're making me pay her to just to go in the room.
Of course. Look at, there's a master tape there, and you get them on the record. Your Honor, on and for the record here, I happen to know that there is a master recording here, and I would like to have a recording as soon as the day is over. Who would I see for that? Is there someone in the courtroom you can direct me to? Okay, get it on and for the record right there. You put it in the record because they're stenographing in that. You know, the stenographers, they're taking it down, and it's going on the recording, and you're letting them know you know it's being recorded. All court cases on the state level is actually being recorded.
Did not know that is helpful.
Federal court, too.
And definitely,
they don't want you to know that.
John?
Definitely keep your receipts.
Hello?
John, this is Bill in California.
How you doing?
You and I and Gerald and Jerry had talked about the Posner case, the Smith versus U.S. District Court case regarding the master tapes that are available.
Right.
In California, there are forms for requesting the audio tapes regarding the hearings. I'm working with Jerry in New York to prepare a letter written request for the tapes. And that's one of the topics I wanted to talk about after we got done the district court issue. What the United States District Courts are afraid of is the fact that you're aware of the tapes, you're asking for the tapes, because the tapes will prove the validity and veracity of the transcripts.
That's right. It'll show the fraud of the court.
And what I'm looking at right now on my own, I have two cases out here. I've created a wall on one end of the tapes, and as I'm pushing them to the wall of the tape issue, they're getting panicky. They're pulling the stops out on me. They go against me because I'm pushing toward the tape issue and getting the tapes and verifying the tapes, because the master tape will show that the transcripts have been frauded, and that means that everybody associated with the court reporter who's falsified them is not a problem. There's a book called The Death of the Justice System that spells it out by document number that's in the process of being printed right now, that is clear and convincing evidence that the Seventh Circuit in Chicago, Illinois, has committed fraud, and it's rampant across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot get these tapes if we ask them?
Anytime a lawyer or a judge opens their mouth, they're committing fraud. Because they're running into a jurisdiction that they have no authority to be operating in. They took an oath to protect and serve the Constitution. And they have a duty to protect any injury from any human being. They have a duty. All that is part of their job. What they were hired for, whether they were appointed or elected or whatever. And with that being the case, okay, as soon as they walk in court and they start talking statutes and making decisions, they're guilty. They're guilty of treason. So, yeah, and they're guilty of RICO because it's all about money. It's all about settling accounts. It's all about, really, it's ultimately the courts are for the purpose of the corporations. And so, you know, it's RICO, it's conspiracy, it's high treason, it's organized crime, it's everything, man. It's a mess.
I've heard of some people using the words, "I accept your oath." Is that something you have
right,
to do?
Right, I usually do that. I accept all the oaths of all the officers of this in this court. And one of the things you want to do, if you really want to rock the boat of the judge, okay, and I haven't done this yet, but the next case I go into, I'm going to do this because I realize it's just something that should be done. But you will rock his boat. Is if you look at as soon as you get a court case, one of the first order of business is they select a judge. As soon as you know who that judge is, you go seek out his oath. And when you do your paper, some more filing, and you attach his oath to it, and you let him know that you've accepted his oath, okay? And that'll rock his boat. Gerard, you here?
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead. Yep, go ahead. We heard you. Hello. Or anybody else that wants to pick up the mic. And I'm wondering tonight if we may end at a little
Hello?
Early tonight, maybe 11 or 11:30.
But
we'll see because I'm kind of tired. Yeah, go ahead. We hear you.
This is Carol from Michigan.
Hey, how you doing,
Carol? I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
You were talking about your Bible class on Saturday, the Bible study.
Right. Right.
Is there a possibility that I can call this same number and listen to it because I don't have an internet?
Right. Yeah. This will. We will be doing this. We're gonna simulcast it through this page, and the reason I'm gonna be doing that is, you know, so hopefully we're gonna get a core of people from NLA that will come into the Bible study and start taking the Bible very serious. And that's the only thing that's going to save America, is a core of people who end up being revealed as the children of God, and who bend their knee and try to serve Him above any other master. And once we can get a core of people in this process, we have a much better chance of operating with integrity, honor, and justice, and mercy, and to maintain the control of those people who don't have that kind of relationship, and we do that by example and humility and so on and so forth. And the only way you can learn these attributes, and these attributes ultimately is a gift from God, and the only way you can really have them and learn them is by going to bend the knee to the Lord, and He gives you those gifts. They're blessings. And anybody who does have those attributes, the fruits of the Spirit, recognize it. They're very peaceful, and they can lead by example, and they have integrity, and people will believe.
Okay, so can I just dial this number that I dialed tonight?
You can dial this number,
and
you'll be in.
And I can hear you then.
You'll be able to hear just like now. You'll be in a queue, a Q&A area. The Bible study will be 1 hour,
okay.
Which, by the way, I decided to do, I have announced this, but we're going to do the book, a book of Revelation, mostly because we're in the end days, and there's a lot of misunderstanding and misconception of that book. I've heard a lot of preachers, a lot of teachers, a lot of people claiming to be prophets in that book, and I know, I happen to know, they have no clue what they're talking about, and they're privately interpreting it, and there's all kinds of strange ideas about this book. Now the Lord does reveal things of the end time, and it's mostly spiritual, but nevertheless, it's the right book for this time. And clearly through that book of Revelation, the gospel will be thoroughly preached, because that is the gospel. If you're not preaching the gospel through any book in the Bible, whether you're in Genesis or Revelation, or any of the prophetic books, or the letters, or of course the gospels themselves, you should hear the gospel out of every line coming through the Bible, the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's where the true focus of real true Bible study comes from. But in any event, I decided to do that book because it's an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for those who really become serious students of the Bible and start to become blessed because of that desire, their earnest ongoing desire to learn and do the will of God. If you have that earnest ongoing desire to learn and do the will of God, you indeed will be blessed beyond your imagination. And your life will be peaceful. And you'll still have turmoil in life, because we all do have that, but the way you deal with it and the way you perceive it and the way it flows through you is totally different than someone who's always has that cloud and problems and disgust and anger and everything else. All that disappears. You don't have that. And that only comes from him, you know. Anybody who thinks they can get to it another way is only fooling themselves. And you know, I think it was William Penn that said, you know, or maybe it was Franklin, one of the two. I think this is Franklin that said this: we will either serve God or tyrants. That's the only decision. If you're going to serve the will of man, you know, the legislation of man, the law of man, if you're going to serve that, no matter what good intentions the originators had, a tyrant will eventually get his hands on it. Because we have a world full of quite a few of them, unfortunately. I don't know what the percentage would be. But we have a lot of people who are opportunists. We have a lot of people who are egotistical. We have a lot of people who are psychotic. and they are drawn towards power and authority. And as soon as they get their clutches on it, you're going to go through hell. And that's what we're doing right now. You know, we've got all these tyrants that have seized control of our government. They're in control. They got their hands on the control buttons, and we're trying like heck trying to get it back. And it's very difficult. We're running into brick walls. We're finding we're not successful at that. And so these tyrants, it's only going to get worse. But now we have a little light. We have an opportunity here with what we found here and portray here in L.A., which is the only peaceful solution. But the people better do it in honor, because if they'll become worse tyrants than the tyrants we're being saved from if we don't keep the focus on where it belongs.
Okay. Just two more questions. I just dialed the same number and the same access code.
Same access code. Yes.
Okay, and the other question is, I understand I missed one the first night. Is there a way for me to be able to hear that some way? Or?
Well, there will be, I got to get the information. We're supposed to have a meeting. I got to call this guy maybe after this call tonight to find out. I think there's a round table tomorrow, which is, they're supposed to launch on August 1st, which is tomorrow, and I think it's in the evening. They're having a round table, and I think they're inviting all of the hosts from all of in the radio station that's going to be part of this thing to come together and talk on a round table. I don't know the details on that. I don't know the time or anything.
John,
I got to get it. Yeah.
Hello, John.
Yes.
This is Neil in Michigan.
How you doing, Neil?
Good. I think that the lady in Michigan is asking, Sally, I think it is, she's asking if she can hear the first one of these programs, and they are on the site.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean, this program? Yeah.
Not this one. The Saturday, the Bible
study. Yeah,
Saturday
will be recorded, and it will be up. It'll be on the bottom of the Monday page, and it'll be called under Saturday programming. We have Monday program, Thursday programming, and Saturday program, all on the Monday call page.
Oh, okay. So there'll be
the recordings will be there.
There'll be a way to catch up.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Hey. Thank you.
Hey, John, I couldn't agree with you more about the peace that only comes from God and turmoil, and not to get away from the highest topic of God. But I mentioned the Republic for the United States of America.org once, but I was really choppy in one of the first calls, and I couldn't really hear what was going on very well. And those guys have contacted me here in Oklahoma, and in their knowledge and my lack of knowledge, I was just listening more than anything. They presented to me the difference in the route that they're taking versus ours, where there's much similarity in the overall process. It's just with the common law grand jury, they're saying that the Scalia stuff is not in the case. Now, he's going to send me his stuff and his views and all that, just, and I'm just happy to learn the law, really, but in the Constitution. But I wanted to...
It is in the case. It is in the case, and you can read the entire thing on Cornell University's law.edu site.
Cornell.
I practically read the entire thing right off the law record, one of the last meetings we had on the phone here.
Okay, Cornell University Law. What was that website again?
Cornell. You can go to law.cornell.edu, and you should be able to find from there. They got a lot of U.S. code stuff and court cases, different things up there. But they have all, you go out there, they got everything on the codes, all the New York codes, all the state codes, everything.
Okay. They were saying that they read it and didn't see where he actually said that it's the fourth branch of government.
Right. Yeah, well, you can read it right in. We do have the case up on our front page right above the video, and you can click it there and see. And he says it's a kind of a fourth branch. He didn't call it directly a fourth branch, but it is in effect, is what he said. That's what it is. It is in effect like a fourth branch of government. And what he's saying, in effect, in the sense of that there's authority and power, we get to rule over all three, you see? And we get to do that through the grand jury. Because, you know, we have no business to be sticking our nose in the business of the people who are elected to do the business of the people. But once these people are not doing the business of the people and they're doing the business of these corporations, they're doing the business of the New World Order, it now becomes our business. And now we can fix that, okay? And that's the unique thing about this whole process. That's what makes this so powerful. It's hugely powerful. Literally, every problem in America can be solved, and it can be solved very quickly. Most of it will solve itself as soon as they know we're here because, you know, what happens when you walk into a room full of rats and roaches? They disappear real quick, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's going to happen when Mom and Dad come home. You know, we're the owners of this country, of this nation, and when we get in there to fix house and roll up our sleeves, they're going to know, and they're going to be running. And there's not a darn thing they'll be able to do about it. And there's too many of us, and we're all over the place. There's no control over what we're doing at this point.
So the other thing, speaking of the law, they said was is that if we do those bills, and forgive me for not knowing the correct terms, the presentment
bill of,
and the other
bill
things.
Bill of information. There's the bills of information, there is a presentment, and there are indictments. Those are the three major. They're all all three of them are called true bills.
True bills, right. And he said that once we do that, we still have to hand that over to the current authority, which he's claiming is a fraud, the same as you guys are, and or we are. And so he's saying then they won't do anything about it. And that's, I guess, why we're going to the Supreme Court and hope that they do the right thing.
I don't know what experience he has in federal courts. I don't know what experience he has in courts at all. And you know, I got a little bit of experience, I think, and I can tell you, that there's laws, and look at the U.S. codes. They know what they are. I went into court, and I've won in the federal court. I've only been in the federal court twice, and I won the federal court twice. And the reason I won is all because I put the judge's rear end on the line. He understood that. We're coming after you. He knows it. And he knows just by the record of what took place to get there. Okay, to begin with. He knows we're a loose cannon and uncontrollable. And the first thing order of business he's doing, he's checking us out and sizing us up on the first day in court. And once you get past that first day, believe me, he wants you out of this courtroom forever. And he wants to be able to do this without having to really get into making decisions or running into situations where you're going to come out after him. And so that's how you got to do that. But you see, here we have a situation where you have we do a file on demand. You can get a copy of that up on the page we were looking at before, where we have those boilerplates. There's a file on demand up there, and you look up that. That's U.S. code. And why did the clerk on the federal court file that paper? And why did the clerks on the state courts, the state court clerks, why didn't they file it? Well, they didn't file it. First of all, they didn't take oaths. Second of all, they haven't got a clue. They do exactly what the judge does, because from their perspective, the judge is their boss. Okay, that's how seriously defunct the state is. Now, when you get on the state level, these people that are the chief clerk of the court, they know that the judge is not their boss. Their boss is the people. They have been either appointed or elected. And in the case of the federal court, there's probably a good chance they were probably appointed. But they're appointed or elected. They took an oath, and they are educated, and they know what the code says. So when we do a file on demand, we're reminding them of what the code says. And what we're saying when we do that is, you mess around with this paper, we're applying this to you. We're coming out after you. And so the court clerk gets the paper, and we filed three sets of papers in the court right now. Two of them are one through, and we're waiting for the third one. There's no reason why the third one shouldn't go through, and this fourth one right behind it. So what is that telling us? It's telling us that the clerk knows the law. Now, we also know it takes them a long time to file them. Why does it take them a long time? Because they're at least giving the judges a heads up. They're looking at the papers. At this point, they know the clerk is going to file them. But he's given them time to evaluate, and just giving them those extra days. Okay, now they're all in the record. Now we got to get this paperwork out, and then we need to take a ride up into Albany, a whole bunch of us. I'd like to get a dozen people or more, and go talk to this court clerk, and say to the court clerk, you know, we filed these papers on this date, and this date. We haven't heard anything. What's the holdup? Where are these papers? Here's the file numbers. Here's the filing, the timestamp. Where are they? Well, what do you think they're going to do? You think they're going? He's going to ignore us? You think he's not going to tell us where they're at? He's going to say it's on Judge Joe's desk. Well, how long has it been there? Well, I sent it up there a month ago. Really? Let's talk to Judge Joe. You know, now Judge Joe is. I don't know whether he'll. You know, usually they run away from us because they don't want to talk to us. And the court clerks, they may come out to talk to us. They're not the court clerks, judges' clerks. We may talk to them, and they don't want to talk to us either. They get nervous. They try not to answer anything. You know, they're like politicians. And but. Look, it's a very simple thing. If he doesn't want to come down to see us, well, let him know that we're going to give him another 10 minutes, and he's got a duty to speak. And as far as we're concerned, when you have a duty to speak and you don't, that's fraud. And we'll have the grand jury give you a jingle, and that'll be that. So that means we'll go before the grand jury. They'll indict him, and we'll send more papers up there. So. We will force that, and let's see what the next judge is going to do. Is someone else is going to hold that paper up? You see, we're pushing it through the court. They know they got to do something with it. They are under a tremendous amount of stress. There is no doubt in my mind that there are phone calls going down to the executive Supreme Court justices in New York City. We have all eight of them under indictment, and those indictments are going through as we speak up in the federal courts, and we know the reason why they're holding it up and they haven't pressed hit the stamp in yet and sent it out to us is because they're trying to give them a heads up, trying to let them know what's coming down the pike, and so they can try to figure out what to do, and they haven't got a clue. They've already used the FBI on us three times. That didn't work. And so what are they going to do? They don't even know who we are, really.
So then the other thing, just for my general understanding, since I'm kind of lacking this, they were saying the grand jury doesn't have the power to remove anyone from office. They can only just have the indictment, and then
who is it up to actually enforce it, I guess, is
Well, look, the grand jury has all of the power to remove people from indictment. They do it for presentment, information, or indictment. Let's understand how things work. Do you think the king goes out and makes the arrest himself? Do you think the king goes out and calls the sheriff to go do the arrest? No, the king speaks, he wishes, and there are servants around him that respond, and they take care of that business. So the people are now the king, of course, and the people speak in the form of presentments and informations, and we order. The judge doesn't go out and do the arrest. He writes an order, passes it back to his clerk. His clerk gets it down to the court clerk. The court clerk moves it over and gets it to the sheriff, and the sheriff goes out and arrests the person. They're brought before a judge for, you know, the purpose to see if they're going to get a bond or whatever the case may be. Fingerprinted, take place, so on and so forth. Well, you're saying that the judge doesn't have power? Sure, he's got the power in his pen. Well, we got the power in our pen. When we write the paper, we're the top of the entire gambit. You know, go read United States versus Williams. He makes it clear we don't even have the authority to overrule a court of record. There's all kinds of court cases. So, you know, the grand jury is a court of record preluding the court, and once it's passed into the court, it's still a court of record, which is picked up then by the tribunal in the court. So with the tribunal out of the court, and the trial jury is the tribunal in the court, they're one and the same. We're all the people, and we all have a job to do. So we write the papers, we put them in the file, and judicial process must take place. It's been like that for 200 years, and it never has been broken. Only today, only now, did they break it in New York State. And only now, of course, they're trying to stall it. Maybe they're trying to break it, but they're not going to succeed because they already know what the process is. They know they have to go forward. They know that there's going to be hell to pay for somebody, and they don't know how these indictments are going to stick or not. And they also know that there's a good chance, because this is so big, especially when it comes up with 48 stamps on it from 48 states, they know this is something heading up to the United States Supreme Court if the right thing isn't being done on the district level and the appellate level.
Hey, John, did you know that the second floor of the U.S. Supreme Court has not been used or utilized since 1933?
No, I don't know anything about that, no.
They keep it clean, dusted, and in repair, waiting for a specific U.S. Constitution case. All other cases have been heard on the first floor. Just thought I'd tell you that. So maybe
I'd like to learn a little bit about the meaning of that. So what you're saying is that they're acknowledging the fact that all these court cases are really equity court cases, which are hybrid, really. Fiction, when they go up with a court case like we're coming in, you know, we've been extremely careful to protect our position in court, to make sure it's clear where we're heading to, where we're coming from, and where we're heading to, and who we are, and we always refer to ourselves as we the people, and they may not have taken that too serious in the beginning, but you know, when they get something with one county stamp on it. And then the next thing you know, as time goes on, they got 62 county stamps on it. And then the next thing they know, they got 20 state stamps on it. And then the next thing they know, they got 48 stamps on it. And then they understand that each stamp, each seal from every state means that they have constituted, that they have, people have gotten together in the newspaper and just been put out, that the explanation is already in the record, what that means. That means there is like 3,000, almost 3,000 counties that have went forward. You know, we know that how we've done it, and we know we have a lot of positions to fill, but the point is we are national, we are a lot of people, and we're representing all the people of the United States. You know, we as a people are over 3,000 members, but we have tens of thousands of followers, okay? So we're a huge, huge block of people, and we're not a political block, we're a judicial block. You show me a judicial block as big as the tens of thousands of people. There is none. I mean, the federal government alone, the federal judges, they are, let's see, the federal judges we have nationwide is something like 1,900 and something, or 1,896 or something like that, just under 1,900. So there's 19 federal judges. Well, we trumped just with our membership, we trumped those 1,900 judges in numbers. Okay, we also, you know, have those seals, and those are seals of honor. We're talking honor. We're putting Psalms in there. We're putting Bible verses in there, talking about judgment and justice. Okay, they know it's coming, and they're frightened, and they know at some point they're not going to be able to control this. At some point, the media is not going to be able to hide it. As a matter of fact, let me make this point here, and I'm going to do this on Monday. Nobody ever talks to the media. We're not talking to the media anymore. The media is our enemy. They don't want to do anything good on us. And why are we going to talk about NLA and what we're doing? Why even tell them those things? You know what? Why don't they go read the papers, and you'll see. You go read the papers, and then you lie about them, because you don't get a communication with us. All our communication is in the paper. You want to know what's going on? Read the paperwork. And that's what we need to tell them from now on. Anybody gets a call from the news, oh, well, I can't talk to you because I'm on the grand jury, and I can't talk to you. But I can direct you to a place where you can get all the information you want. It's all spelled out in detail. Would you like to have that? Sure, I would. We'll go out to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on news and read everything there, because everything is laid out in paper. So how are they going to distort that? Okay, it's
on
a lot
that
harder
note,
for them.
On that note, John, the other reason I'm continuing to engage with these other guys is because they were under the impression that we were engaging the military or trying to contact the military and rise at some ridiculous thing.
Right.
Like
we have
what
nothing
was
to do with
on the front.
We have stayed very far away from anything that was radical. All that will take care of itself. We don't have to get involved with that. That if that's necessary to come up, that'll happen on its own, and it won't have nothing. We that's not our job. Let's put it that way. Someone
sir, if you wanted
back
to share
to
your
us.
Email, I can send you the link for that cornell.edu.
Yeah, yeah. It's TANNERJUSTIS@AOL.com, if you can hear me.
Oh, what is that last?
That was Keith. I had to mute him because he's got some real bad reverb or something coming through. Keith, you can unmute yourself, *6, when you get rid of that background noise. Sounded like an electronic
problem.
The email is TANNER.
TANNER. J-U-S.
Yeah, like Tanner. JUSTIS, Tanner Justice. @AOL.com. Yeah, I still use AOL. It's okay.
All right, so you have it.
Thank you. I appreciate you, sir.
John?
Yes.
This is Marge from El Dorado, and I just had a quick question. Do we have a constitutional right to actually order an audio transcript when we know we've been screwed with the written transcript?
Absolutely not. We do not have any constitutional rights.
Well, I know we didn't. That was
record,
fun.
John.
I know you know, right. But I just wanted to remind
yeah.
you. Okay.
Thanks for reminding me of that lousy question. But is there a procedure that anyone can go through to attempt?
You just bring it up in the court. I have heard that when you bring it up in the court and put it on the record, they are obligated to give it to you. Think about this. Just think about this. They had to go out and buy that tape and a recorder and a system and put it in. Who paid for that?
We did.
And why they got it in there? For a record.
For sure.
Okay.
For a record.
So since we paid for it and so for a record, we own it. Now, we
sure.
realize that the court has to be the keeper of that tape. We appreciate that. But to get a copy, I want to get a copy at the end of the day. I'm not waiting a week for it.
Okay, so it should be really included into your papers.
I've just recently learned about that. I wasn't aware of it myself.
We learned about it, too, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. John?
Could you...
I love the oath thing. You know, I accept your oath, which is just wonderful. And then, you know, you know, plaintiff will accept an audio recording of this of the procedure. I don't know how you would quite do
it. Oh, no, you do it live in the courtroom, and then you follow it up. You follow it up in your affidavit that was what took. That's one of the things that took place in the court. So now you have a sworn affidavit that it took place too. But you do it right in the courtroom. Say, you know, by the way, on and for the record, I'd like to have a copy of the recording that's being taken in this courtroom right now, the audio recording. Can I pick that up right away, or do I have to come back in an hour?
Oh, I love it.
I see.
Oh, great. Just love it. Yeah.
So with multiple...
The source for that audio tape authorization is Smith versus U.S. District Court officers out of Chicago, Seventh Circuit. So if you type in Smith versus U.S. District Court officers, you'll get the reference to that, and it was done by a Judge Posner, P-O-S-N-E-R.
Wow.
And the other cases you can look up is Zorick, W-Z-O-R-E-K, versus City of Chicago. There are four federal courts court cases up there that Zorick did, and they all key around the issue of the master tape.
Ah.
And Judge Posner, Seventh Circuit federal judge, made the ruling in Smith versus U.S. District Court, and then there's another, it's a Smith versus U.S. District Court officers, and then within that case, there's another Smith case, it's called the Smith versus U.S. District Court, and go look at both of those cases, and the Posner says that when the veracity and the validity of the transcript comes into question, the only place you can go is to the master audio tape. The master audio tape is the record. The transcript is a facsimile of the record. The true correct record is the audio tape.
Okay.
That's where we all got to go get.
Okay.
So if we have multiple court cases and we're not even sure if the transcript is right or not, can we still get the audio?
Yes. Now, I'm in a civil action. I've had 29 hearings. I've asked for the 29 transcripts and the 29 certified master tapes. And the California Stenographers Board doesn't know what to do with me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. And, of course, you haven't gotten one tape, right?
Not in that one. I did have another action where I had four hearings and I got four tapes because I went directly to the court stenographer before the hearing. I mean, as the hearing ended, I requested the audio tapes from her directly. And she gave them to me.
Oh, you know what? That's very interesting because we've certainly had, a conversation with the court transcriber, so I never thought of going directly to that individual for the tapes.
There should be two copies of the tape in the courtroom, one by the court stenographer. She's required to keep one.
All right.
The other is the court itself. Now, does the court itself have video recordings? Up on the National Liberty Alliance, there's a page in there that has the Stop the Cop on it. Right below there is a video from a guy from Fresno, California that got the audio visual out of
his
court case.
It's Marge is in there, and they're talking about the request for certified transcript tape, master tapes.
Certified master tape.
They take of the whole court case that you're in, and they're finding out that they can't get them.
Hey, Joe.
And then they get really in trouble.
Joe, when you get a chance, you need a new mic, okay? Because you're coming in pretty bad. A lot of static.
Well, John.
I just stated those cases. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. This is Bill in California.
Huh?
This is Bill in California. Go ahead.
California. I'll look you up, Bill.
Okay. I'm in Tulare County. If you can't get me, get Debbie and Kern.
Hello, John.
Yes.
Yes, this is Mike. This is Mike from Erie County.
Hi.
Speaking, good. Speaking of the, if I could say something here, on the court tapes that you guys are requesting, the certified court tapes.
Yep.
I requested in my cases, I requested certified transcripts, and I never got the audios, but I got the certified transcripts. And the transcripts were certified that they were given to me by the stenographer, but it was incorrect. There were pieces missing from it.
There always is. Look it. Let me tell you something. Anybody that goes into court, you got to get a recorder in there.
You have to have your own. That's correct.
You have to have your own recorder and do a really good affidavit, very very specific, and then get that into the record.
Correct. Yep. That's correct. Okay, on that.
And then if they challenge anything that you say and then they go back and they show on the record it didn't exist, you click the button on your recorder that you should have set on that place and start playing the sounds that took place in that courtroom.
Let me ask a question. Does it matter if you're in a single-party state or a two-party consent state for recording?
You mean to record someone? Look, first of all, remember, those are statutes. If you're part of the conversation, there's nothing wrong with recording the conversation. It's going in your ears. You're recording it in your brain anyway. Okay, now you're just making sure you're holding them to be honorable. And the reason you're recording them is because they're not honorable. Otherwise, you wouldn't be recording them, right?
I was told I couldn't bring tape in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, John, if you go to the local spy shop like you were talking about, and I think
exactly.
It's a great idea.
Just go to the spy shop. You'll figure something out. We don't want to talk about what or anything, but you go there, you'll find some different things that would be very interesting that you could use.
Right, yep. And if we take it down ourselves, it's still admissible, correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Look at you catching them on fraud. I mean, look at what crime. Tape recording is a crime, and you think that's bigger than the fraud that they're pulling when they expunge things out of the record? Forget about it. That is so many different things. Forget about it.
I love it.
So if you're directly asked, are you recording? I mean, could you just not say anything?
Well, they're not going to ask you that.
No, they're not.
I've never been asked that.
Not unless they can see something.
I've always brought recorders. I got a lot of recorders into the court, and I've made recordings. But lately, I haven't been able to get anything in there. But I went out and did get something recently, and it's totally undetectable.
Okay. Terrific.
They have it out there. You look for it. You'll find it.
Is it an expensive item, John? Do you know?
$79, and it's pretty darn sensitive. It's pretty good.
Okay. Great.
And one of the key things with these recorders is, you know, you stick it in your pocket or you put it in a book or you lay it on your lap. It picks up everything, every sound. So you have to put it down somewhere totally stable, touching nothing, and not move. So what I have is something I could lay right down on a table, and it would never be known.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
It's good. Okay, John, I had a couple other things, if I may bring them up.
Yeah.
Please. Okay, New York statute under CLS, section 155 of the traffic, section Article 1, section 1, it says that a traffic infraction is not penal or criminal. Okay?
Yeah.
And under Section 1.5, it said that a traffic infraction is not, they cannot convict unless there's an information or an information is required, and if it's not complied with, the uniform traffic ticket will not stand.
Neither is a summons. bear in mind, they have things they call information, and either the police will do it, or usually the lawyer will do it. He'll do the information, and they think that that's real. That's irrelevant. Look at, remember, those are statutes. It is good to know that they're breaking their own statutes and maybe even bring that up to them. You know, by the way, you know, other than the fact that this is all illegal under common law, you know, you got your own statutes here. You're not even paying attention to that, you know.
Right.
So, but, you know, the key thing is this. There's nothing to argue because they don't have jurisdiction.
Right, right.
And I'm not coming back to that court. If I'm in a Supreme Court, I'm not coming back to that court after my first day in. If I'm in a county court, if I'm in a town court, city court, I'm only coming once. I'm never coming back again because I'm moving everything into the federal court immediately because they just violated my unalienable rights. They hijacked me, okay, took custody of me. By hijacking me, whether I physically went to jail or not, it's irrelevant. They've taken custody of me. They claim custody. I warned them of the collateral damage that was going to happen upon this court. And if they don't understand what a court is, you know, the court is the makeup of the people in it. That's what a court is. It's not the building. That's just a place we go to hold court. That building is just to facilitate the court. When you walk into my court, I am the court and my witnesses. I am my witnesses and the magistrate, and when the jury gets in, if it's necessary, that's my court. They make up the court. When you walk into their court, it's made up of all the officers of the court. It's made up of the judge, all of the lawyers involved, the bailiff, and you can't get the stenographer. They're not an officer of the court. All those people, and if there is a police officer in the process, okay, he's part of the corporation. Well, because he's the guy that's coming in and making the claims, without doing an affidavit to begin with, but also making the claims on statutes that have nothing to do with you, you have one nice conspiracy here. So you're not coming back there no more. You see, we made the mistake, but this is okay because making the mistake and what we've done, we're trying to figure things out. We puzzled for a long time. We spent way too much time in their stupid courts. We'd be there for 6-8 months coming back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then, you know, eventually often we get success because they just want to get rid of us. And there's other things. But the key thing is why go through all that? Why let these lawyers make all this money? Let's take the money instead of letting them make the money. Sue them right there, right away. Bring your axe in. And when as you're leaving, you're just taking down trees, man. Because
right.
That's the attitude you have to have. I'm there is no more mercy. When I leave this court, there is no mercy from my court, you know? And sit down and be
right.
Quiet.
Right. Okay, if I could say something on the federal court, but before I do that, what time is the Bible class on Saturday?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Okay, good.
Eastern Standard.
Okay. Right, right. Okay, if I could say something on the federal court. In 1991, I filed two federal cases in the Western District of New York here in Buffalo, and one was against the family court and the child support court. And
well,
you
went right to the center of evil here, huh?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And the other one was against Cattaraugus County because they stole my property for a property tax.
Mm-hmm.
And I filed two cases back-to-back, which was a mistake. But anyway, I held them off for about 8 months in both cases, and I did it myself without an attorney. And I was learning as I was going. Well, okay. Finally, they ended up dismissing mine on the 12B6 failure to state a claim. And I beat the immunity rap. They said they had qualified immunity, and I filed my papers into that, and they did not have it under the Sovereign Immunities Act. They didn't have the immunity. And then they came back with a 12B6 that I failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Okay, so I appealed it. Well, I went to the appellate court in Rochester with all my papers and everything, and I went in to file my papers, and I appealed the federal court decision, and the clerk at the desk said to me, he says, I'm sorry, he says, but I can't file this for you. I says, what do you mean you can't file it? He says, we don't have jurisdiction. I had another fellow with me, and he says, what do you mean you don't have jurisdiction? I said, he says, we don't have jurisdiction. I said, well, it's right here in the opening statement. I says, here's the jurisdiction that you have against all state, county, and public officials. And he just looked at me, and he didn't say a word. Then he goes, We don't have jurisdiction. I said, it's right here. What more do I need to put in there? He says, you better hire a lawyer. I says, no, we don't do lawyers. And so I stood there until he would tell me why. And finally, he said to me, he looked around and saw nobody was in the building. So he took me out, took me into the back room, and he says to me, we don't have jurisdiction. He says, now read it to me again. So I read it to him again. He says, now read it slow, real slow. So I read the jurisdictional statement to him. I got to the part about the state officers, county officers, public officers, and he says, stop. And he looked at me and he says, those are the only people we have jurisdiction to hear this case on. And I was kind of confused. I was like shocked. I think I knew what he said, what he was trying to say. Well,
probably
then Rod Klass, wait a minute. Now, Rod Klass had filed an administrative review, and he filed with the appellate court in the state of North Carolina against all these officials. And the ruling came down where the police officers, the courts, the judges, the agencies and administrations are not state. They're
right.
Private. They're all private.
Right, but you can get them, okay? You can still get them because, you see, they're defrauding everyone to make them think that they are, number one. The people are electing them, even though they don't understand. And the key thing is they are taking an oath. And they have
and
a copy. That's why when you get a copy of their oath, they don't like that.
And not only that, but they're being paid. They're being paid by the state.
Right, the whole thing is a fraud. As a matter of fact, it's subversion against the United States of America. It's exactly what it is. And we wrote that in our paper, that they're guilty of subversion against the United States of America.
Right.
And so that's something that they're going to really chew on quite a bit.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, because that's I went after them in their private capacity and their official capacity both as individuals. So, and then they dismissed it on the 12B6, and the appellate court went here. But anyway, I learned a lot. I learned a lot. It was a good experience.
Well, that's the only way. You see, you got to get, look, at we've got 4 years or so in the courts, all kinds of courts. I've done scores of cases and written scores of cases. I didn't go battle them all. I just wrote a lot of papers for a lot of people. And of course, I was in the court with you know, a few of them, and particularly our own and with other people, you know, being there helping them because they don't let you speak as an ex-friend, and that's a violation. But we're getting better at that ex-friend business. You know, I did a they played a game, but I did a writ of habeas corpus as an ex-friend, and even though they threw it out after the fact, before they didn't throw it out before the fact, and the guy was let out of jail, and he was let out of jail on the 11th day from the serving of the paper. They had 10 days, and on the morning of the 11th, he was let out. That's what tells us that's why they let him out of jail, because of that. A writ of habeas corpus. Now, they also knew, I think, you see, these are the judges down in Prudente, and the executive judges that we're going after had a very focused attention on this case because they recognized some of the procedures and the paperwork and what he was doing. And I did make a phone call down in this city, and I was on the phone. I didn't reveal who I was. But I was on the phone, and I was speaking with some kind of a police officer down there who had put out a paper on an individual, and the whole thing was intimidation, and I wanted to know by whose authority and who did this and why he did it. And he denied doing it. I said, well, your name is on it. Is your phone number? That's how I got your phone number. I'm calling you. And also your email. And he says, I didn't realize his email was on. I was asking for his email. He never gave it to me, but I had it anyway. But anyway, he was denying that he put that out. And then he acknowledged, he said to me, he says, well, you've become pretty popular across the nation here, haven't you? So I caught on right away, and so I just went right back as if I understood what he was talking about. So you see, they already connected us all up here in New York, even down into New York City with these cases, because they recognize the language. And when that writ of mandamus went down there, the writ of habeas corpus went down there, they knew it was connected with the grand jury. We didn't bring that up or anything. but they put it together, and that's why they got him out of there. So you see, again, these people are very, very nervous, and they don't know what to do or how to handle us. And they found a way to throw the paper out, so they think, okay, because they haven't gotten our follow-up, and they may think we don't know what to do, but they're pretty dumb if they haven't figured it out yet, that we're able to come back every single time, no matter what they do, we're able to come back to them and get something overpowering where they can't say anything. And so, again, there's a lot of pressure in New York. There's a lot of pressure on the federal level in New York, and it's soon, I think, to come upon the entire nation once we get this paperwork out.
Right.
But again, we do need funding. I'll bring that up again. We're hoping to get some funding, but we don't know whether we're going to get it from this guy or not. But if not, we're going to have to depend on the people to get some money to us to get this out, because this is it. This is the knockout punch coming up right now.
So. Yep. Well, on the habeas, my friend did a habeas on me to get me out of jail from the family court, and that worked. That worked really nice. But
well,
anyway,
that's good, because it's rare. It's very rare that these work, you know. Okay.
I know.
They realize you see, if you write it right and you position yourself right, and they see that, they get nervous. And again, in our case, you know, we're going down to the pit of hell. We're talking New York City here, okay? We're in the pit of hell. Of all of the judges in New York, these are the most evil. And
rotten apple.
Oh, forget about it. And but in any event, this is not something easy to get put past these people. So you see, these are little signals that we're picking up to realize that these people are really shooken. Another thing, we went and talked with judges. Their clerks, okay, which are all lawyers, okay. These guys, if you were in the Supreme Court and you're a judge's clerk, you're at least a paralegal, a very good one, but generally it's lawyers. And when these guys come out and they'll say, oh, the judge isn't here, we know the judge is inside there. We already been told that he's in there, and by the clerk, as a matter of fact, in this one case. And he came out closing the door behind us. He didn't want us to even get into the first room, and he was stuttering, and so he was afraid of us, and we're nobody, you know. But you know, again, there's something coming down. They're all frightened. They know it.
I know. And in my case, after I did my federal suits with the family court, the only thing they can do, I cost them a lot of money. I heard through the grapevine. And they were really ticked at me. Well, then my next wife ended up taking me to family court over custody with my children. And for retaliation's sake, what they did is they took my kids away from me, prevented me from seeing my kids for 9 years. I could not see them without even committing a crime or doing anything wrong whatsoever. And it was all retaliatory and what they
yeah,
did to me.
They're evil.
Yep. Very evil. Very evil. Yep.
Did you ever get any restitution? Did your children get any restitution yet?
Nope. Nothing. Yeah. No, I haven't done anything. I don't know which way to go on this.
Well, the grand jury's coming up, but, you know, people are not going to be able to get the full restitution. The real restitution we're all going to get is the fact that we're going to get our nation back and justice
right.
back into the halls. And I, you know, there's probably nothing but jail for these guys. You know, there's only so much. They only own so many houses and so many cars. You know, there's a judge up this way that is boasting on the fact that he has in his career hashed out over 1 million years in sentences. That's a pretty
wow.
sick statement to make. Pretty
wow.
sick. And I think he needs to go to jail for the rest of his life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's going to pay on the other end, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're not going to worry about it too much. Like I tell these guys, we're not on a witch hunt, but the people will come out after them, and the wrongdoing has to be dealt with, and the people will decide. You know, you and me are not really going to decide, but we'll be part of the process that'll push it through the justice process. And the people will do the right thing as long as they're trained. Once they hear these horror stories, boy, they're going to be so appalled that this is going on in their courts and been going on all these years under their nose. They're going to be so angry. And,
I know.
the sentences are going to be harsh, and we're going to have to really train them well before we send them in there to say, look, you still got to consider mercy, so don't get vengeful on this and get angry when you start to hear these things. You can get angry, but now you got to make the right decision. And you got to be a just decision. Maybe they don't even deserve mercy. You know, considering mercy doesn't mean they deserve any mercy.
Yeah, that's true.
So, real quick, this is Tanner from Oklahoma. If I was to do this writ of habeas corpus, would that help me with my jail situation at all? I mean, I don't really.
The only way that would help you is if you understood how to deal with it and frame it and be able to step up and back it up when it's necessary. And if you don't have that experience, it's tough, and you're not going to be able to get away with it. Look at the judges are looking, especially the federal judges. They're chess players. When they move their knight, and you move the wrong piece, and they see you, you don't know what you're doing. Okay, and they make another move, and then you make a move, and you make another wrong move. Wow. You see, they figure you out in a short period of time. And, you know, just watch what they're doing in the court. You know, when the judge I had one of the federal cases when I went in, he corrected my pronunciation of a common law word. I forget what it was. It was the entourage, but it was a different word. And but it meant entourage, ultimately. And
it wasn't was it?
No. But, you know, and when I was talking, he looked at me and he gave me this witty look and he says, oh, you mean so-and-so. And I said, yeah, thanks. So, you know, so he's not stupid. You know what I mean? He knew what I was talking about. A state judge wouldn't have a clue on what I'm talking about. So they're chess players. And if they figure they can turn the steamrollers on and get away with it, they know when they can do it and they also know when they can't. You got to make it so that they know that they can't. You have to make the right moves. You got to put them in check every single time. He makes a move, check. He makes a move, check. He makes a move, check. When he realizes that, he knows he's done. He knows you're shooting for checkmate and you're going to get it eventually because there's a good chance you're going to get it eventually. And that's how you win in a federal court. It stinks that you have to do it that way. You have to use... you have to play their game to sense, but I mean it's like a chess game.
Yep. Oh yeah. I mean, by the way, you were talking about the United States District Court. There's two courts there. The way they spell it, there's the United States District Court in lowercase, which is the common law court, and then there's the District Court of the United States, and
well,
that is all.
The District Court of the United States is supposed to be the one that is the common law court. The United States District Court is the one that's supposed to be the fraud. But it really doesn't matter because we paid for the building, we pay the electricity, we furnished it, we supply it, we pay the salaries of everyone in there, we've elected people and pay their salaries. There's appointed people, we pay their salaries, and that's our courthouse. And they have the authority that's given to them through Congress, we read that particular code a little earlier,
right.
And it leads right to Article 3, and we're going to hold them to the fire. This is what you are. You can overlay your fiction all you want, but we're looking past the fiction because the fiction to us is not a reality. It's just fraud, all-out fraud. And we're not going to play your fiction game. And this is how we're coming into their system, and this is how we're talking, and that's how we're going to win.
Right. Hey, that's excellent. Yeah.
Donna,
that's a different approach.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're talking about the letter that you're going to need a bunch of funding to send out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said we could send the letter out.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And are you talking to the county court here?
No. We're going to all the federal courts in throughout the nation, every state. We got about 1,800 and some odd judges. And we have about 150 district courts and about 12 appellate courts. And we need to do it all at one time in one day. They all got to get it at the same time, maybe a day apart at most, depending on the distance of the traveling of the letter.
So where do you find it up here on the site?
We didn't put it up there yet.
Okay.
We'll be revealing it by Monday, and we'll talk about it on Monday.
What letters do you recommend one sends to their sheriff
at this point, it's kind of almost a waste of time. We're talking college level to children in first grade or kindergarten, and that's not an exaggeration in what I'm saying. They have no clue, none. What they don't even know this world. They don't know.
Hey, John.
Have to go. Yeah.
This is Bob in Newburgh. This is kind of exciting stuff you're talking about here. You want to take them all down in one day.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's got to be a full house thing, or if we do it sporadically, we're in a battle, and we're fighting too many fronts. We do it in one shot. It'll be such a shocker and such a stun. They won't know what the right hand will not know what the left hand is doing. Look, Judge Joe is going to get onto the phone with a guy that he knows is a Christian, maybe, and he's a pretty righteous guy. And whenever things deep go in his cases, they always replace him because he's not going to do the right thing. So now Judge Joe gets this letter, and Judge Frank gives Judge Joe a call and says to him, "What are you going to do?" And he says, "Well, what do you think I'm going to do?" Okay, so that makes this other guy worried. Okay, now we did put in there an olive branch. Okay, we're not interested in chasing these judges' past sins, and we made the point that if we're going to go in there and take everyone out that's guilty, there'll be no judges left. You'll all be in jail. Okay, so we're not interested in doing that. We're not on a witch hunt. Our eyes and focus is on saving the Republic, and that's where we're at. And you work with us from this point forward, we're good. We're not coming after your past sins. Now, that doesn't mean that when someone that has been injured by these people come up and make the complaint, that we're not going to go after them then, because we don't have a choice. If they did a wrongdoing and the skeletons start coming out of their closet, I can't help that. Nobody can help that. But we are not going to dig out their skeletons, nor are we going to go to attack them or look to investigate them. We have a different job to do. We're trying to save the Republic. That's our job. And the other stuff we don't have to worry about. Look, even if they pass through and get away with it, who cares? That's up to God to deal with them. They're not going to get away with it.
So whose responsibility is it? Is it the state coordinator that hooks up you when everybody sends this out at the same time?
No, people are not going to send. We can't trust that we're going to be able to get enough responsible people in every state to do the job. So we because what will happen is we'll try to pass it off to people who will say they'll do it, but something will always come up. I didn't get around to it. I got so tied up with business. I didn't have the money this week. I mean, all these things will be months, 4 or 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, before all these things letters get out, and they'll be too sporadic. It won't be as it won't be as impressive and as it won't have the impact as hitting every place in one day at the same time. So we have no choice but to actually do every one of these letters ourselves. So we're going to get a team of a half a dozen people to do the stuffing. I'll have Staples run it off because it'll take too much from my printer, and we'll buy the stamps and get the envelopes and get together for a day with maybe a half a dozen or a dozen people who will volunteer to stuff envelopes, put on stamps, and crimp papers with the Embrasa. And
volunteer to stuff envelopes if you want.
Okay, where'd you say you're calling from?
Donna from Amador.
Oh, what state then? You're out of state. You're not in New York, right?
No, I'm in
California. Yeah. No, this is going to have to be, this is local. All this paperwork, we're going to sit down in Denny's for a day you know, have our coffee and cake or lunch or something and just get this job done. And the only thing we lack, we don't lack the people, and we don't lack the plan, and we don't lack the written letter form. What we lack is about $5,000 to do it. And I'm guessing, you know, that that 25, I'm going to guess we're probably sending out, let me think, 21, 22, maybe 2,300 letters, okay? So 2,300 letters, and there's 10, 12 pages in each one, so it's got to be 3 ounces or better. So they're probably going to cost a buck and change a piece to mail. Let's say $1.25, $1.50, $1.25, let's say. So, you know, right there is almost $3,000 just in mailing. It's going to cost a couple of $1,000s to print it off. And so maybe $5,000 isn't even enough.
Well, what would you recommend? I want to get more people interested in my county to put out information to get involved. How would you recommend me doing that?
Well, there are two flyers we have up on the Juris page. If you go up to the Juris Docs page, you'll see two flyers up there. You can choose one of them or both of them, and or you can get ideas from that and create your own, and you can hand them out. The other thing is you know, you order the Juris Handbooks. They're $65 delivered for 100. You order them, and those the best thing for those is to take those handbooks and go to a what do you call it meeting. Any kind of a Liberty Group meeting, and you print out there's a double-sided flyer that we made up, and it has all of the problems, Agenda 21, and you know all these different things, and we have an X through it, and it says the magic bullet, and we talk about there really is a magic bullet, and then we talk about the U.S. versus Williams case, and.
To the Juris section on the site, and which section is those flyers in?
Yeah, if you go to, let me get on the page myself. Getting this wrong one here. Let's see. Okay, if you go to Juris and highlight Juris, and when you look down after highlights, a pop-up will happen. And you go and you click on Juris Documents. Now, when you click on Juris Documents, you'll see flyers in there. There's a flyer 2 and there's a flyer. Let me see which one is the one I'm talking about. Probably flyer. It's spelt wrong, but yeah.
It's just flyer.
All right, that's a good one. You know, only the people can save America. This is a half-page flyer. So you can actually... print them off and cut them in half, and they're half pages. Now, that's one.
I could custom a flag that goes on the antenna of my truck.
Then there's a second flyer. That's not the one. There must be a third one around here somewhere. There's another one that I did. I thought I put it up here. Let me see. She can recall... Oh, yeah, Magic Bullet Flyer. That's what it's called. You click on the Magic Bullet Flyer. It's a two-sided, two-page, you know, it prints on two sides, okay? If you don't have a printer that prints on two sides, you can do two pages and staple it, or you can go to Staples and have them print it out for you, and they can print two sides. And it has, for instance, SAFE Act, Agenda 21, out-of-control judges, loss of America's manufacturing base, GOs, energy crisis, right to travel, privacy, autism, IRS, police brutality. I mean, all these problems. And then we have NLA equals 911. Then we talk about America's problems being overwhelming and the magic bullet in big letters with a question mark. And we go, I know it's hard to believe, but it's real. Our founding fathers did not leave us without remedy. And then we bring them into, eventually into the U.S. Versus Williams.
Okay, and...
So that's a good flyer to hand out in anywhere. But if you hand that flyer out in a Liberty group and you bring Juris Handbooks with you and give them a copy of that, you know, they're going to see the law for the first time. They're going to be blown away when they start reading that booklet.
Okay, and if one wants to make a flag to put on their truck, what would you recommend?
I'd put an American flag upside down.
And so I just wanted to get this out to the people so I could put a flag upside down, which is normal, right? And
well, flag and upside down is a message of distress.
Yeah.
Upside down flag. So I think a lot of liberty people realize this now. You know, I know in the beginning they didn't. I've even had people get upset. I have in my office a flag that I had when I was in the service, and it's an American flag, and it's hanging in my office right now on my wall upside down. And so it becomes a conversation piece sometimes. People tell me, you got your flag upside down, you know?
Well, that's because we're in distress.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what else do you recommend me putting on my antenna? Because I really want to get people interested in
that. Yeah, I don't know about that. I can tell you that this flyer is good and the booklets are the most powerful. I think the flyer and the booklet together is powerful because the booklet, the flyer, gives the magic bullet. It describes all the problems and says this one magic bullet deals with everyone, the Patriot Act, all these problems. Bankruptcy, war, terrorism, government spying, what are they spraying, special interests, the Fed, religious freedom, illegal aliens, terrorism. I mean, all this stuff is dealt with the grand jury. So it is a magic bullet. And once they realize this by reading this paper, and then they read the law.
So
yep.
You, on the same thing under jurist, you just go to Grand Jury Handbook Final Cover?
Well, the handbook, you can take a look at that. That's what we're printing out. We're getting delivery on that tomorrow, by the way. So okay. I won't be able to get them out till Monday morning, but I'll be working over the weekend packing them all up, getting them ready to go. Although I haven't gotten boxes yet. I got to get boxes. But I'll work that out.
So I could just order mine on here.
Yeah, you have to order through the mail. There's no way to order on a credit card yet. So you have to order on the mail, send a check or a money order or something. And, I've had people send me cash, you know, wrap it up good. I've had people wrap it up in tin foil or just wrap it up in a piece of paper and send cash if you don't want to send a check or something or a money order. But, you know, I've been getting it.
How about 2 gold coins, man?
Hey, I like that.
Hey, John, this is Tanner.
Yes.
I know this isn't really for this, but I've really been having trouble getting to everyone because they're so busy. That's like Roger from the States meeting. We've got constituted in Oklahoma. I don't know what to do next. I just got handed this position. And I'm
right.
Just trying to figure out what do I need to do next.
Be on Monday night's meeting because we're going to be unveiling a new PowerPoint video that'll be telling exactly what needs to be done and really get a focus on where we're heading. And there'll be more videos to come. They're instructional. Puts us all on the same page. And if you just, you know, the people who are not going to be rebellious with this, there will be some people who will be rebellious because they want to do certain things that it's not what we're here for. And that's okay. They'll just reveal themselves, and if they break the rules, we're going to have to get rid of them, and there's no other way to deal with it because we have to have honorable people here. And so if you pay attention to see what we're doing, all these things will click, and you'll see how important everything we're doing is. It's got to be done right. It's got to be done. We have to develop the right kind of attitude. We have to develop a way to build up our forces. And I think you'll see on this first video, it offers a very good way to build up membership in your state. Very good way. And it's working in New York. We've already executed this, and we are starting to grow. Look, we have a lot of people already in, but our meetings are starting to grow, okay? And that's been the big thing, is getting the people active. You know, you get the same 12 people every week, and that's it. Well, not anymore. Now it's growing. Okay, the people becoming active, and we look for the commitment. Everybody, every day, we do a roll call, And we're going to talk about this on the video. We do a roll call in our meeting. And it doesn't matter how much time we spend on this roll call because it's the most important part. You know, someone picks up, they get up, it's their turn, and, you know, hi, I'm John from Dutchess County. I'm committed. I brought one person with me this week, and I'm going to bring another person next week. Next call. You know, everybody go right to the roll call. You see, that's how you grow, okay? And you want that commitment. You want them verbalizing it. You want them verbalizing it every week. And you want them at that meeting every week. And you want them to bring someone with them every week. And we're doing it in public. You know, last week I didn't bring anybody, and I got too busy. And I said, hi, I'm John from Dutchess County, and I have to apologize to everybody. I'm very sorry. I didn't do my job this week. I'm going to bring two people next week. You know, and we had two other people, or at least one other person, said the same thing. So, you see, we lead by example, and we have to activate people. So we first activate the people in our roles, the people already in the game that's in NLA. They're already signed up. Let's activate them first. They've already made a commitment. They already know what's going on. You know, so that's the first order of business, is activating those people. And then we activate, then we go out and we visit, other groups, Liberty groups. We bring those flyers. We ask them if we can have 10 minutes to speak. We give them a flyers, and we give them a book, a jurist book, and we speak for 10 minutes, and we should pick up membership.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the story about how they magic in the late 60s and early 70s?
About what now?
Holiday Magic Cosmetics.
Oh, no, I didn't.
They wouldn't let anybody come into the meeting unless they brought someone with them, and then they had to give them a presentation.
That's interesting.
I'm going to let you go. I enjoyed the call today.
Great. Yeah, it's just about coming up on midnight. If people don't mind, I'm going to take off 7 minutes early. I want to go to bed. But anyway, I think it was a nice meeting. I think we accomplished some good conversation here.
Me too.
And we'll have another one next Thursday. Yeah.
Hey, this is Keith. How's his mic coming in now?
Coming in good, Keith.
All right. Well, I was trying to get in earlier, but I'll just wait and jump in next week here. I've been listening in. I had my volume turned up too much on the mic there. But
right.
Anyhow. Enjoyed the call. Sorry to butt in.
Okay, great. No, that's okay. Anytime. And, we'll look forward to you next week. And again, don't forget our Monday night meeting and the other meetings that we have also. And we have a new state meeting. We'll have to figure the Tuesday, Wednesday things. I have to call Roger. I'm going to ask him to move to Wednesday. So
I'm on board.
Okay, great. Great.
Hey, John, this is Bill in California. Is Lydia still on?
Lydia, you still here? Yeah, I guess she's got.
You know how I can contact her?
Yes. Let me think here. Let me look real quick, see if a number. let's see. Lydia. New York City. Okay, I can't. Well, maybe I can get to her this way. Hang on a second. I'll see if I can get to her phone view profile. Okay, here's a phone number. Ready?
That's 585.
516-445-4390.
Copy, 516-445-4390.
Correct.
All right, thank you, John.
Okay.
Hey, John, when we order the books, I live in the mountains, and I was wondering, do you do P.O. box shipping or...
Well, yeah, it's either going to come out UPS. I haven't decided whether I'm going to use the postal system because they do a pickup and package also, and I hear they got pretty good rates. So, but either I use the postal system, which means the postman, if they can't leave it in the box, I don't know if they leave things at your door, or at least they'll put a paper in your box that it's there, and they'll bring it back the next day, or whatever. But I may use FedEx. And I may use UPS. I just don't know which one yet. And tomorrow I'm going to start kind of interviewing these people for prices and see what I can get the best deal on.
So it's just best to put both addresses in then? Physical and the P.O.?
Well, yeah, if you put the P.O. box in, you'll get a little ticket in your P.O. box when you go to your P.O. box, which will tell you to go to the window and get a package.
Okay, all right.
And if it's UPS, well, you know, you're going to want to give me a physical address also because if they, I don't know, FedEx and UPS would be different.
Yeah, they don't send it back if I don't have a physical, if that's what you're going to use.
Right, so you're going to want to give me a physical address. You know, I never even thought about that. I got to look to see how many P.O. boxes I have, but I got their phone number. I got everybody's phone numbers. I can call them.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
Have you considered bulk mailing facility?
Well, I'm going to work a deal. Look, they have a deal out with people that send packages all the time, and I might get a meter. And they'll stop by every day, and you get some pretty good rates on packages. And I think the U.S. Post Office has the best deal. For instance, I can send a package up to, I think they said 72 pounds, okay, at one rate. And the rate is, you know, whether it's 1 pound or 72 pounds. That's a good deal. Because that will be better. Because if I'm sending 1,000 out to someone, it's got a lot more weight than 100, you know. And if I'm sending 500, so it'll be the same price, and that'll save us money.
Hey John, I don't know if this is true or not, but when I was studying some law and different ways, they say there are some people that sent packages and mail for free. And not using the green cards, they used out-of-country cards.
Uh-huh.
And there's a way to send things for free. I just need somebody to research that for you because I didn't get deep into that.
Well, I heard something about being able to mail a letter for 2 cents or 3 cents, and
three
you have
cents.
To take it. 3 cents?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if it
I was
works
talking
with
to
packages.
The other day was telling me he mails stuff all over the country for 3 cents a piece, and then he signs his name at an angle over the stamp, and it's never not been delivered.
Anything
well,
on packages with that?
I just know
I didn't get a chance to ask him.
For free using out of country the pink card. For like if you have to certify something, but then there is another way they're doing it, sending regular mail in regular envelopes for free. So I don't know. I could try to find and kick that back out of my computer and send it to you, but that'll save you a lot of money.
Hello, John.
Yes.
This is Ricky in the Phoenix Springs, Florida.
How you doing?
Well, pretty good. Say, I was wondering if you could change something on the website for me.
On
the donations page, what if I want to make a donation that's not in one of the amounts that you've got in the drop-down box?
Yeah, I was looking on how to do that and because someone else had asked me, and I'll try to get out there this weekend and see if I can put it where you just put your own amount in there.
Okay, that will be a big help because I might want to make a donation, say $65 or $130, and then send you an email telling you why I picked that amount.
I appreciate it. Well, the other thing you could do is also drop it in the regular mail if that helps.
Yeah. Don't do mail.
Don't do mail. Okay. All right, let me see what I can do. Someone else asked me. I'll try to do something.
Okay. So, take it easy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, and good work, by the way. Great work.
Well, thanks. And everybody's doing a good job. And you look at the people that are going to carry this thing are the people that are coming to the meetings like this and all the meetings. And I think we're building a core of elite people that's really going to drive this thing. And so we'll see how it goes.
That's
all right, with
going
that, I'm going to go to bed, everybody.
Good night.
thanks for coming. Have a good night, and Lord willing, we'll see you on Monday, and or anybody that's going to come to the Bible study on Saturday. Okay. Good
night.
Thank you.